Wednesday night, kiddies.
Yes, Carl. I'm happy it's Wednesday.
Wednesday. Wednesday is actually the end of your work week, right? Because once you produce a show, technically,
yeah, Monday,
this
Monday
is your Friday.
Is Pulsing Radio. Yeah, Monday is Pulsing Radio, and then Wednesday is the end of Off Topic. And I really start working on Pulsing Radio on Sunday, and then Monday I start working on Off Topic, and then usually by Tuesday it's already the guests are scheduled, and I've done the pre-interviews.
Right.
Today I was doing – I spent a lot of time on the phone talking to our two guests, Mel Chancy and Jim –
Is it pronounced Magnon? Magnon, perhaps? Magnon?
Magnon? Magnon, yeah. Magnon,
okay.
Sorry.
The Italians, when a G and an N are side by side, it takes on a nasal sound. So like M-I-G-N-O-N-E is Mignon. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just.
No, he told me it's an O, a hard O. Like
okay.
Magnon. Magnon.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I checked it out. I asked because
cool.
I was worried. You know, it's funny. I talked to remember Chris 250? I can't pronounce his name, last name either. Chris Gekinger, I think it is.
I don't remember.
We had him on the show.
I don't remember him. I'm sorry.
You don't remember him, really?
No. I don't remember who I had on Superhuman Radio last week.
No, yeah. Anyway, we had him on the show, and he was training with him, and apparently a lot of people think because he goes Magnum, Jim Magnum.
Okay.
Or Magnum is like his screen name on Professional Muscle. We should have to give a shout out to Professional Muscle.
Yeah, I checked them out. Well, nice things they had to say about the show.
Yeah, they have a thread about actually Dante of Dog Crap Training put up a thread asking what radio shows are the best because I guess he's – you know, I've offered to have him on our show before. You know, remember the owner of True Protein?
I actually got
talked of Dog Crap Training. You remember that guy?
Yes.
Dusty Hanchel's trainer?
Yes. Actually, I communicated with him a few years ago. I tried to get him on Superhuman Radio.
Yeah, so he won't do any of the radio shows, but now he's kind of reconsidering. And on the thread, a lot of people are saying positive stuff about our show as the show he should come on.
Oh, cool.
If there's one show that – so I
– Aaron, are you there? Oh, come on, Aaron. Look at this. We're already having technical difficulties. All right. I'm going to have to take an early break here. I don't have much of a choice unless, let's see. Let's see if he reconnects right away. Yeah, let's see. Something. It looks like Aaron may have lost his internet. That's the only thing I can think of. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Off Topic. Live radio, baby. This is what happens when you do live radio. Shit happens. We'll be right back. It's not just a playground. Think you're the real deal, honey. And someone will always look out for you. But wake up, baby. You're so totally deluded. You'll end up all lonely. Okay, we don't have to take a break. We have Aaron back. Aaron, you there?
Carl, I hope that this doesn't do. Remember last week you kept cutting out.
Yeah, I don't know why. It can only be the. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I can't even guess.
Because we didn't have a problem. Remember with Pulsing Radio, we never had a problem.
Well, maybe we won't have any more problems. I think it's internet related, but we'll try again.
Yeah,
anyway,
but this is at her house. It's all hardwired.
Oh, so you're actually plugged right into the wall.
Yeah, to my Ethernet connection.
So no wireless, in other words.
No, there's not on my computer. I mean, she has a wireless router.
Yeah, but you're plugged
in the
house. I gotcha. Yeah, I don't know what else to make of it, to be honest with you. It's just,
yeah, we've never had this problem before. Now, all of a sudden, it disconnects. Like,
yeah.
It's saying – what's happening is I'm actually – it shows me I'm still on the internet. I'm looking at – I can look at other web pages, but it just says connection lost on Skype. And then when I try to reconnect, it doesn't go right back. It goes connection lost. And then eventually it calls you.
Yeah, I don't know. You may want to reinstall Skype one time. Just
it keeps saying that I have an update due. Maybe I should.
That might be it. Maybe that's what they do to annoy the shit out of you until you go and get the update. I don't doubt that sort of stuff goes on. Like if you don't, all these guys who haven't gotten the new update, let's just make their software stall every time they do a call. Like every 3 minutes, it stalls. They have to reconnect.
It's so funny too because you know I was using this the other day to call a potential guest for in the next. I don't want to announce his name,
right.
But from a guest from the UK, and I was talking to him, and I never, you know, we talked for a while. I never had any problems.
Yeah, let's see.
We have a good guest coming on from the UK. I don't want to say any names yet, but
okay.
It'll be good when we get them. I'm excited about it.
All right. Anyway. So anyway, let's talk about what's going on in life in general. You've got to tell the story, first of all, and I don't mean to cut you off, but you have to tell the story about what happened with your dog.
Yeah. So my dog's name is Rasteem. If anybody hasn't seen him, I got pictures on Facebook. He is a long haired, they call him a woolly, Siberian husky. And he's just about as good a dog as you get. And when I've been in Chicago this last weekend for Junior Nationals, my parents have been taking care of him. They really never had taken care of him for any kind of amount of time before, because Amy used to always, you know, when I was gone, if Amy was still here, then Amy would take care of him. If we right. both were gone, then I would leave him in a kennel, a shelter. So anyway, this is the first time they really took care of him. And, when I got home from Chicago, you know, I got home on Sunday very early and, I slept most of the day because I didn't sleep the night before. And then I went and worked out and I ended up leaving the dog there an extra night. Well, after Pulsing Radio Monday night, I called my folks' house to tell them, you know, I'm going to come pick up the dog. And, they told me, or my dad told me that Rasteem had killed my mother's bird.
And what kind of, this and was a lovebird, right?
Yeah, it's a lovebird.
So now a lovebird is big. I mean, it's not gigantic, no, it's bigger than a parakeet. It's bigger than a parakeet.
No, they're not. No, they're tiny. I mean.
Oh, really? I've always seen they're kind of large, very, very bright green birds. And
maybe like the size of a slightly larger golf ball.
That's kind of small. Okay. So anyway.
Very small. Yeah. You got confused when I told you about this. Lovebirds, if you put two of them together, they'll like mate and like stay together forever and be all lovey-dovey on each other. But if you only have one lovebird, this is what my mom tells me, then the bird will get attached to the owner and be all lovey-dovey with the owner.
Right.
My mom's had this bird for 11 years. The bird's name is Jade. I guess because she's jade-like colored. You know what I mean?
Right.
So anyway, my dad told me this and hung up on me. And I was like, oh, great, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I didn't know the situation. I didn't know what had happened. So I got to admit, I was a little concerned, you know. Maybe I'm thinking to myself, maybe Rasteem, or, you know, P.J. Braun calls the dog, instead of Rasteem, he calls him Rammstein. Rammstein. So
that's
pretty good, right?
Yeah, that is good.
So I went, and I was thinking in my mind, I was thinking maybe Rammstein knocked down the cage and ate the bird, you know? It's possible. He's big. These bird cages are put up, you know, when he jumps up, he could easily jump up and put his head at my head level very easy. So if he really wanted to, yeah, he could jump up, pull the cage down, eat the bird. You know, that's definitely possible. So I was concerned driving there. I was like, oh shit, you know, cause they're going to be really pissed if that's what happened, you know,
yeah.
If he pulled down the cage and ate the bird, you know what I mean?
That's tragic.
Yeah. It's tragic. No wonder what, cause it's my mom's pet for 11 years.
Right.
But it would have been bad. It would have been bad for me and for Rammstein if he would have pulled the cage down and ate the bird. So I got there and my mom was pretty hysterical, you know, very upset about the bird. And I was able to ask her, you know, what had happened. And she said that exactly what had happened was my mom has three birds, just to give you a little background, two much bigger birds. And one of the what they like to do is when she made the mistake of letting the birds out with the dog in the room.
She made the mistake of letting the birds out and taping small pieces of bacon to their wings.
Well, you know, I keep saying Rammstein now.
I know, that's great.
Rammstein. I was going to say it again. Rasteem.
Let's call him Rommel for short.
Rommel. So anyway, Rasteem usually has learned from being at my parents' house so much. You know, because I was there for, almost a month living there. He has learned that the birds are not to be touched, you know?
Right.
So he will stare at them, and he's like gets extremely fascinated by them when they'll fly overhead or land on a little, on a ledge there or whatever. And he really won't touch them. He knows he's not supposed to. He's very smart.
Right.
And he can resist jumping up and going, trying to grab them, you know?
Right.
But you can tell he's very interested in these birds. Well, anyway, the birds were out, and my mom wasn't paying close attention to Rasteem. And what actually happened was one of the bigger birds went into Jade's little cage to explore and took her little toy, which she thinks is her baby. It's like she throws up her food on it and everything.
Right.
He took the bird, the little toy bird, and threw it out of the cage. You know?
Right.
I don't know, I don't know what the motivation was there, but he wanted that little fucking toy out of the cage. So he tossed it out. And, Jade saw that he had thrown the baby, out of the cage. So he flew down to the ground to save his baby.
Right.
Well, Rustim can, control himself when they're up on a ledge or flying around. But if they're on the ground, you know.
Well, it's also a dog, it's a dog's reflex. I mean, Rustim could have been totally oblivious to what was going on when the little thing hit the ground. He looked, and then all of a sudden the bird is coming in, and he just reacted and like chomp, you know.
Right. So what happened was he ran up to it, grabbed it in his mouth, and I don't think he like tried to crunch it, or certainly didn't try to eat it, because I saw what was left of the bird, and Rustim's a big dog. This is a very little bird. If he would have crunch down on it, there would be very little, it would be squished.
He could have swallowed it whole.
Oh, he could have swallowed it whole. Right. So my mom saw the bird in his mouth and yelled, no. And so the bird, from what she told me, limply just kind of fell out of his mouth, you know, rolled off his tongue onto the ground.
Which means he knew that he didn't want to kill the bird.
Yeah, he knew he had done bad, you know, that he shouldn't have done it. But like you said, if it's the first instinct, you know, and,
in fact, it was said, on the Doggy 411 website that they heard a very sullen "oh fuck" from your parents' house when it happened,
like in doggy language.
Yeah,
he
barked. Yeah, only other dogs heard. Yeah, oh fuck.
So anyway, she was upset. The bird was dead, man. It was like, I guess birds are fragile. It was a little bird, and Rustim crushed it on accident. So when I got there and she told me the story, honestly, I was sad the bird was dead. You know, that's horrible. But I was relieved that he didn't, he didn't like, I guess he caused it. You know what I mean? But it wasn't.
Well, he didn't like eat it and like start fucking ripping it from piece to piece. Like, it was obvious that he didn't mean to do it.
Not just that. I mean, the bird did, shit happens,
Yeah.
The other birds threw the toy on the ground. The other bird, Jade, flew down to save its baby. And this is what happened.
Right, right.
So
it's unfortunate. It's very unfortunate, but it's now that bird will come back as another life form.
Is that what you think will happen?
No, but tell her that, and then maybe she'll be like, "Oh, okay." You know, Mom, you need to look in the eyes of strangers and see if you can see what was the bird's name.
Oh, yeah, that'll be
what was the bird's name?
Jade.
Oh, that's right. You did say, that. Mom, you have to look in the eyes of strangers and see if you see Jade's spirit.
Yeah, that will make her feel a lot better.
You know, I
meet a really, really stupid person. It might be Jade.
You want to hear how stupid I was when I was a kid? I had these two. Did I tell the story about the two green turtles?
I don't think so.
I had these two little. You know the green turtles that you get in the plastic kidney shaped plastic tank that from the pet store when you're a kid. You know the little flat green turtles.
Yeah, I mean I've heard about like
green. Yeah, they call them green turtles. And so I had two of them. My grandfather had big box turtles in his garden, and I said to my mother, no, I said to my cousin Vincent, I want big box turtles. And he told me, you let those green turtles go in the backyard, and in a couple years, they'll come back. They'll be big. He says, they got to eat worms and bugs, and they have to. I was like, okay, this is cool. So the next morning, that evening, I took the little kidney-shaped tank with a little plastic palm tree in the center, and I put a plank of wood coming out of the tank and a plank of wood coming down into the garden, and I put both of them on the plank of wood inside the kidney tank, so that they could like make their journey up and down and go off and become big turtles. And I said goodbye to them. It was very ceremonious because I was like, I'm not going to see them for 2 or 3 years. I'm like, oh my God. But when I do see them, they're going to be giant box turtles. So I go to bed that night, wake up the next morning for school, and we lived in a basement apartment. We were actually below ground. So my window was above, like you had to look up and out of my window at the ground. And I look up and out, and there's a thin layer of snow on the ground.
Aye.
And like at first I'm excited. I'm like, fuck, snow. Lunchtime, we're going to be able to play. And then I go, oh, wait, the turtles. So I run out in the backyard, and there they are, exactly where I left them, completely frozen solid with their legs pulled into their shells. And they're like, this is it. We're dying. So I fucking go berserk. My mother, I say, Mom, I can't believe it. And so she wants to just get me back in control so that I can go to school. She goes, look, don't worry about it. We'll take them to the pet shop. They'll turn them into parakeets for you. I'm like, really? She goes, oh, yeah, they do it all the time. Don't worry about it. You go to school. that evening, she took me to.
How old were you? This is when you were 16, you said?
No, no. I was probably, in first or second grade. I was probably like maybe 6 years old, 7 years old. And so the that night she takes me to the pet shop. We picked out two parakeets. She says, there they are. And I believed her for like probably a good part of a year that was actually the turtles, reincarnated. So those are the cruel jokes that parents play on their children. Along with Santa Claus and
the Easter
Bunny.
Did you ever do anything like that with your kids?
No, I always told them the truth.
That's good. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
I think parents back in the day thought we were too fragile to handle the truth. So they did what they thought was right. That's it.
Right, of course. So this weekend, Carl, before we get to what I did this weekend, I want to put out a little retraction.
Okay.
Because when we had on – who do we have on when we were talking about George Foreman rules?
That was probably about
was it
three
Kurt?
Shows.
It was Kurt, right?
Yeah, maybe Kurt. It was Kurt. Yeah.
Yeah, so we were talking to Kurt James. We're talking about the difficulty we have with getting forum members on the show on occasion,
right.
You know?
Right.
Or that we had in the past, you know, and it hasn't been as much of a problem lately, but in the past we had a hard time getting forum members on. And I think that Kurt mentioned that, you know, I wanted to have on George Foreman rules, who's very well known on MD and other boards throughout the internet. I think he's got, you know.
Right.
I think he's the only one that has more posts than Kurt. I might be wrong, so don't quote me on that, George. I think I said something to the extent of I may have alluded to the fact that I thought maybe he was scared to come on now.
Right.
Because at the time when I asked him, he said not till the end of May because he had some classes he had to complete. Well, in fact, I never got back to him to re-offer the invite. So it wasn't that he was scared. He let me know, and there was actually a big thread on MD in the pit about how I'm a bad journalist.
Right.
And
did you go in there and post and say you're not a journalist? That's
no,
like go. That's like going to a mechanic. You're a terrible fucking dentist.
Exactly. And that is true. But I did post in there that I apologize, and that if I had any inaccuracies on what I said, I apologize.
Right.
So I do still want George Foreman rules on the show, and you know. I apologize. Anytime we have any inaccuracies on the show, especially about other people, I like to correct them. And so that's what we're doing now. And I need to contact George Foreman, and we'll figure out a time that he can come on that works for him. And you'll hear him in the near future.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. That's good. I look forward to it. I've always liked his posts and stuff, and he has a great sense of humor, especially when he's been drinking and posting. So I'm looking forward to having him on the show. All right, so now, are you still there, Aaron? That was my fear. This can mean only one thing, kids. I got to play some fucking music again until Aaron reconnects. Let's see how long it takes him to reconnect. We'll give him a couple more minutes. Anyway, here he is. Welcome back, Aaron. That's okay. Don't worry. Don't belabor it. So anyway, we're looking forward to having George Foreman on the show, and we'll make sure his phone works. So don't worry about it.
Yes.
What else? What else is going on? So you went to the Junior Nationals and you got the chance to stay with Sally Ann Taylor, which is – that alone is worth traveling far for. So, I mean, how much better can it get? I'm asking this question and he's dropped again. I'm going to have him call in on a phone line here in a second. By the way, Sally, you posted on the board about Supreme Radio server – the website not coming up. We're moving to we're migrating to a server. It's taking a lot longer than I had anticipated. And that's why the Supreme Radio website is having some issues right now. But, that should all be cleared up. Yeah, I know.
Very frustrating.
I wasn't going to say anything. That should all be cleared up by the weekend because we are finally going to flip the switch on the new server. We just had a lot of testing to do to make sure that everything was going to work properly. Okay.
I don't know how I'm going to conduct these interviews if this thing keeps coming out, going on.
I'm
going
to have to call you back on a phone line. That's all. I'll just have to bring you on a phone line.
All right.
So anyway, talk about Junior Nationals. You got to stay with Sally Ann Taylor. That in and of itself was a wonderful thing. Tell us about
it. Yes, it was. We stayed at the Embassy Suites, which was across the way from the Hyatt, which everything was held. It was actually great that I've been to Junior Nationals many years ago with an ex-girlfriend who competed there. And I forgot kind of how they do it, but it's all at the Hyatt Regency. Rosemont, which is very close to the airport.
I'm very familiar with it.
Yeah, and it's all in the one hotel. So it's not in a ballroom, which, you know, I guess people might say that it would be better to be in a stadium or some sort, but it really works. You know, the fact that it's all encompassed in one location, everybody, the competitors and most of the people there go from the room to, you know, you can eat at the buffet. They have a bodybuilding friendly buffet. You go from there to the contest and back again. It's very easy.
Right, right.
As a result, I saw very, very, very little of Chicago, but, it was still a very, it was a fun trip.
Yeah.
And, got to hang out with some cool people. Like you said, Sally Ann Taylor was my, roommate. And, we worked out together the first day I was there.
Wow.
I was really on target the first day I was there, Carl. I did cardio in the morning before I left at 5:30 in the morning, 45 minutes. And then as soon as I got there and Sally Ann checked in, we went and worked out shoulders and did 45 minutes of cardio together. And I was on my diet the first day. It all fell apart Friday though, Carl.
I heard that you ate, and I found this humorous. On Pulsing Radio, you questioned my ability to be disciplined on my diet and training after you admitted to eating half a what?
A pecan pie.
But I have to tell you something. I have to commend you. You know, you never cease to amaze me, the eclectic palate and reading you have. And if I had to totally pig out, if it's a really good pecan pie, I mean, one that's not laden with that jelly fake shit.
This shit was good, Carl.
Yeah, I love pecans, man.
It had some bourbon in it.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
It was good. It was good. It was like New Orleans quality.
Oh, yeah.
Pecan pie. It was for real. It wasn't the jelly shit.
Right. Pecans are the fucking best. I eat them. I buy bags of them at Trader Joe's and eat them now.
Well, let me tell you, this pecan pie was that good. I mean, I basically had the buffet. Even though there were some better choices on the menu, so that I could have the pecan pie. So
that's great.
Yeah, it was good. It was definitely.
Now,
good.
Did anyone in your family ever make? Did anyone in your family ever make a really good pecan pie? Your grandmother, anybody like that? Because I know that's pretty much a tradition down there, right?
New Orleans is. Yeah, people will buy it. You know, you can't. Some of the bakeries in New Orleans, like a Gambino's bakery, you can't make pecan pie like that yourself.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I mean, I guess you could, but nobody I know can make pecan pie like that, or key lime pie is a specialty also.
Yeah.
New Orleans, and of course, you know, king cakes from Mardi Gras.
What are king cakes? I don't think I've ever had them. Oh,
really?
Those are the ones with the little, is that the cake with the little toy king, the gold king in it? That's what you're talking about?
Well, a lot of times they have a plastic baby.
Right. They have some sort of ornament in there, right?
There's right. Whoever gets the baby has to buy the next king cake.
Oh, great. Right.
Yeah, and it's big, round, almost like a big donut, cinnamon kind of donut, covered with icing and like sugar crystals in the color, the Mardi Gras colors, you know, green and purple.
Right. Right. Bloodshot.
And there's all different varieties, you know. They have cheesecake king cakes, like with the inside is got cheesecake in it, or a cream filled, or you know, all these different kinds, but. They have some very famous bakeries that are famous that ship those things worldwide.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Mardi Gras is in February, I believe. So that would be fun if we had an RX Muscle or a off-topic, I shouldn't say. Off-topic radio Mardi Gras trip.
Crew. No, we got to set up an off-topic radio cruise. They do that where you can have like – you can get like maybe 10 or 20 or even 30 boardrooms, and we could like have everybody from that listens to the show, like whoever wants to spend the money, show up. That would be pretty cool too. And just eat. Just fucking eat for like 2 days straight.
We'd have to promote that. Like give like 6 months in advance
so
that we can make sure a lot of people can come. Or a year in advance even, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe for the 150th show or something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We're at
80,
by the way, Carl. This is 80.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, 80. It really is amazing. You know, 80 is pretty damn close to 100.
By the way, real quick, we had Dusty Henshaw on last week's show.
Henshaw.
And he fared pretty well at the Nationals, right?
Yeah, well, I knew he would. I told you I saw his progress pictures. And as a super heavyweight, you know, if you're a super heavyweight, and he was a big super heavyweight, weighing in at 262, and he's working with Chris Acido.
Right.
Who is a great nutritionist and has worked with a lot of top guys, starting with Jay Cutler. And actually the guy that I learned the majority of my stuff from reading, getting his books, you know, Championship Bodybuilding, I've always really believed in, the way he diets people down. If you're 262 and you have shredded glutes, you know, it's pretty rare and, pretty hard to beat. So I knew he was going to do really, really well, especially at a junior nationals. And so he ended up winning his class. And I would say, you know, I don't know the score sheets, but I'm sure he got second place in the overall, very close to Matt Loudon, who was the heavyweight winner at 206. And we'll discuss this a little more with Mel Chanty because he was there and he watched the overall. He actually presented the trophies to the middleweight and the light heavyweight winner.
Right.
So, anyway, yeah, he did what I expected. You know, I really thought he would win the overall, and after watching it myself, I thought he should have won the overall. But it doesn't always go that way, you know. Obviously, the judges saw it a little bit differently, and I can see the argument for Matt Loudon winning because he was a little drier,
right?
And he had a little bit better shape, although he's considerably smaller muscle size.
Right.
I got to tell you, Carl, I don't know if we're gonna have really time to talk about this in detail, but while I was there, somebody provided me with my very first weed brownie.
How was that? I've never eaten weed, so I've never understood whether or not it really makes you stoned.
Well, it tasted great, but it smelled so strongly of weed. It was like, you know, it was weird. It was a weird deal because it's like you're tasting a very good kind of fudge brownie, but as you're eating it, you're smelling this overwhelming smell of weed. So it was kind of like – it was a little sickening kind of the
really?
Tasting of it. Yeah, it was very strong, very, very strong. The person who gave it to me told me, you know, make sure, you know, that one will really, you know, mess me up. So, of course, I ate the whole one. And
But did you really get stoned from it?
So the funny thing was I started feeling it. The problem was, I think, Carl, is that I eat so much pecan pie and other food that it didn't really hit me right away like it did some of the other people I was around.
You're still buzzing from this sugar.
So I mean, I was so full. I think it just took time to digest.
Okay.
So when I woke up at 5:30 in the morning intending to do cardio, I was so fucking ridiculously stoned.
Ah, that's
like,
funny.
I was like stumbling around. And
it was like,
you
know, it was like, time released.
Oh my God, I was so loaded. My Jesus. I mean,
did you do cardio?
I went downstairs.
Oh, you did.
To the cafeteria area because I realized I wouldn't be able to do cardio. It probably wouldn't be safe. So I went down there to eat breakfast. They have free breakfast at Embassy Suites. And I'm sitting there with my cereal, and I'm feeling like everybody is staring at me, and I'm eating the cereal so funny. And I was like, oh, my God. Imagine how the paranoia kind of feeling you get off of weed.
Yeah.
Times like 10 or 50. You know?
Oh, man.
I was like, everything I was doing, I felt like everybody was staring at me. And finally, I went back upstairs and went back to sleep, and I think I slept it off because when I woke up, I was okay.
But didn't you get like the best sleep when you finally woke up? Were you like really rested?
I think so.
Yeah,
I can't really remember.
They need to legalize weed just so that people who have sleeping problems can smoke it because it's by far better than.
I think I took more than what somebody would take to sleep, though. You know, like I said, this shit was extremely strong smelling, so I can only imagine how much weed was in what I ate.
Right. Right.
You want to do our show? You want to call Mel and do our shout outs while he's on the line? Because we're at 7:30 right now.
Yeah, let's go ahead and let's take our break now. Let's do this.
Okay,
let's take the break now. We'll get Mel on the phone and then we'll run through the shout outs at the same time. Okay.
Let's do it.
You're listening to Off Topic. Stay tuned. This is a brief commercial break and it'll be worth sitting through. Is life just a playground? Think of the real deal, honey. And someone will always look out for you. Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans. Periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging is included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today
at AaronSingermanFitness@hotmail.com.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Species Evolutionary Nutrition. The Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
50. Ferrari F50. Shawty, you ain't got to take your pants out. It's cool to decide.
Welcome back to Off Topic. I like this
Carl.
Man. Hey, Aaron. Did you eat during the break, Aaron?
No, I didn't. I need to feed Romstein.
Rusty next break.
So, Carl, do we have Mel on the line? We're going to skip doing the shout-outs for right now because it looks like I just got a text message from Mel, and we're on a time limit. So is Mel here?
Yes.
I'm here, guys. What's going on, you guys?
The great Mel Chansey is with us.
Aaron, Carl, how are you, man?
Good, man, good. So this is like that Superman episode, no comment till the time limit is up. He's on a time limit. Remember that one?
Yeah, yes, I do.
See, because you're old enough to remember that, okay? Aaron doesn't know what the fuck we're talking about right now.
No clue.
So, Mel, what are you rushing off to do? What's the deal?
My nightclub. When I'm in town, I run a big nightclub here in the city. And tonight's actually our open night. We're open Wednesday through Sunday. So tonight we have like a Spanish hip-hop night.
Oh, dude. Oh. Where is this?
Right in the heart of the city. Right, it's called Spy Bar.
Are you in Manhattan?
No, Chicago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, wow. Very cool.
Yeah, Chicago. So we get crowded tonight. But we just had some bad storms that were going through here, really bad. But they passed. But, you know, so I got to go down there and make sure everything's ready to go for the night.
Cool.
Oh, they think maybe there's some damage or something?
We had a lot of tornadoes touched down in the area. Power's been out and everything. So usually I don't get there till later. You know, I usually don't get there till 11, 12 o'clock. But I'm going to go there, you know, by 9 o'clock and make sure nothing, like you just said, nothing got hit or anything, you know.
So this is a little different. We're starting with something a little different, Mel. Tell us a little bit about the nightclub stuff. I mean, have you always worked in the nightclub since the last few years? And what do you do there?
Yeah, I run all the security. I used to have three in Chicago, but it's one owner. And the owner is, you know, a childhood friend of mine. We grew up together. And he's had three or four several different clubs. So, and the one I'm at right now is currently Spy Bar. But I set up all the security. I hire all the guys, all the floor guys, you know, the waitresses, everybody. I'm in charge of the whole entire floor there.
So in other words, in Las Vegas terms, you are juice.
There, yes. You know, it all comes down to me. I mean, the liquor license, everything weighs on my shoulders, you know.
Yeah.
If there's a problem at the bar, your guys handle it at this point, right?
Yeah, my guys handle everything that's on the floor. I mean, I'm out on the floor in the office back and forth. And, you know, I've been doing this for 11 years now. So I pretty much know everybody in the city, the people that come in. It's the, you know, it's the whole club scene, you know.
Aaron, did you go to his club while you were in Chicago?
No, and I really regretted that. That was something I was really looking forward to. But my flight left the airport, took off at 5:30, And Carl, we didn't get out of there till what, midnight, Mel?
Yeah, it was a little bit. It was actually after that, 12:30, because, you know, we asked these guys. We had a crew of guys going with us, and we actually, Dave and Aaron and them guys were supposed to come, but it was a little late by the time we left there for these guys for the early flight.
Yeah.
I mean, I was burnt out at that point. I was praying Dennis and them guys didn't want to go out, so I didn't go home. But, you know, I knew better than that.
Yeah. Dennis James was with you, and he said he was starting dieting for his next show. Tomorrow, right? Today,
yes.
Right?
Monday. Yeah, it was
Monday. Yesterday.
2 days ago.
Three days.
Monday. Yeah, he started.
So this was his last hurrah before he got it to dieting, huh?
And we had one too. We ate everything under the sun that weekend. As I think you probably seen or heard, we were constantly in that restaurant across the street at Gibson's. I mean, all day.
Yeah, he's doing the show in Spain, which I was surprised about. I didn't know that's what he was planning on doing.
Yeah, the Spain show, and then to the Olympia.
Yeah, I'm planning on going to that show in Spain, so I'll be there rooting him on.
Great, that'll be a good time out there.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I was actually asking him, because a lot of times with those shows in Europe, those shows tend to get canceled. Obviously, if that show got canceled, he'd be completely screwed because he couldn't requalify.
Right, exactly.
So I mentioned that to him, and he said, "Better not."
Yeah, he's praying it. Don't, you know.
Yeah. Now, if it does get canceled, he's going to think you're fucking bad luck, Aaron.
Ooh.
He's gonna think you put. Ooh. He's gonna think you put the maloikia on him, and he.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mel, I know we just wanted to touch on this. Actually, we were talking earlier about your time with the Hells Angels.
Yeah.
In case anybody doesn't know, you know, you were the president of the Chicago chapter of the Hells Angels, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
From what year to what year?
Geez.
Approximately.
Like 93 to 99, because, you know, I went to prison. And
sure. So the interesting thing when I was talking to you about that, and I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but it sounds like, you know, at this point, you don't want to be thought of as Mel Chancy, the former president of the Hells Angels.
Right, right.
You've moved past that. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, like we said, that's always going to be, you know, adhered to me, a part of me. It is my past, and I don't regret it. I'm not ashamed of it or nothing. You know, there's a bunch of great guys over there. I have the utmost respect for them guys, and it's just that my life took a different path. You know, I went away to prison. When I was in the state prison, the feds indicted me while I was inside. So instead of coming home my out date, I went to the fed prison, and then I came home for 4 years, which was 3 years, 2001 to 2004, and then the feds indicted me under the RICO statute for stuff that I did 10 years ago. But getting back to how my life turned is when I came home from the prisons, it just, unfortunately, I became public enemy number one out here in Illinois and Chicago and the Midwest, because, you know, we had some stuff going on with other motorcycle clubs, and it was getting a little hectic out here, and so all the fingers pointed at me. And, you know, through the years when people have got caught up on their cases, and I was the easy name to say to get out of doing a lot of time. So,
shit.
You know, once I became that figure there, it was just time for me to come home and pursue different avenues. You know, I got into Oz for a little bit, and, you know, did a little bit of wrestling, and then, you know, back with the bodybuilding and running the club. So, you know, it's like I said, my life just moved a little bit out of that direction.
Did you say you got into Oz?
Yeah, I was in that
on the show Oz.
With
what's his name? Chuck. Yeah.
You
remember Sonny Barger?
Very well.
Yeah. When I was a kid, he was like, when you would read about him, especially back in the day when the real fucking rock and roll music was playing.
Right.
And the Hells Angels really had, really, in my opinion, the Hells Angels really came on the scene with California, the whole Sunset Beach, and then, and they were really solidified in the public consciousness after the concert.
Gimme Shelter.
Yeah, the Gimme. Yeah, right. But I mean, the funny thing is that when I lived in New York, I rode, but I was I wasn't a dedicated. I rode to fucking college and back, and I used to hang out with a bunch of guys out in Long Island that rode for the Pagans. They rode with the Pagans, and I used to run into them at a bar in Long Island called Rum Bottoms.
Uh-huh.
And you know what I found out about these fucking guys? Most of them were really highly intelligent fucking guys.
You know,
good. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's what it is. I mean, we, you know, everybody knows through the years the Hell's Angels and Pagans have been in the mishaps with each other and stuff like that. But if you really take it down in a hole, it's a lot of the guys are the same wherever you go in the motorcycle world. You know, no matter what club they are in, what patch they have on their back, a lot of guys have the same values and morals. You know what I mean? Just like you said.
But, you know how I see them? And I know, take this in the spirit that it's meant, but they were yesterday's geeks, bikers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today the geeks are all about fucking computers and stuff like that. But back in the day, bikers were kind of like a really down-to-earth group of guys who liked wrenching, first of all, quite often. They liked it because every fucking winter they tore their bikes down, and every summer something new came out of the garage.
Right.
And you can't wrench unless you have intelligence, you know what I mean? You have to know what you're doing to take a motor apart and put it back together again.
Yeah, yeah. I have no clue.
Yeah, oh, really? I used to love doing that, man.
I knew how to put gas in that thing and get on it and drive it. So
didn't you actually say, Mel, that you actually didn't enjoy the riding portion of the whole deal?
Yeah. I don't have a bike now. I sold my bike when I was in prison to a dear friend of mine, you know, and I don't ever ride, ever. I mean, I hated it back then. I mean, I can honestly say that I only rode because I had to, you know, it's one of the rules to be in the club, and you put a lot of miles on your bike, you know, being a Hell's Angel all over the country. But, you know, I was in it more for that brotherhood part of it, and then the nonsense, man. I'll tell you the truth. I was in it for the violence of it and what we did. And back in them days, that's how I lived. I had tunnel vision for whatever it took. And so I didn't care. The bike was just an option for me, you know.
It's funny, knowing you now, Mel, it's hard for me to imagine – you being the same guy. Do you think your personality has changed, or do you think that same stuff is still in you that was in you at that point in time? You just moved on.
Well,
as far as activities goes.
Yeah, I mean, as far as that nonsense goes, I mean, I look back at it now and laugh, and you know, I hear stories, and of course, I lived it. But you couldn't pay me to go back to that lifestyle and live the way I lived with, you know, I mean, I had four separate houses with four separate girlfriends that I was with all at the same time, years.
Right.
You know.
Were you drinking a lot, Mel?
Never drank. I mean, I shouldn't say never. I drank very, very seldomly.
Were you getting high at all? Or were you sober back then?
Sober back then.
No shit.
I was training in the gyms, and you know, supplemented up, and just that was what I did.
Right.
I might have a few drinks, you know, once or twice, you know, a month or something, but. No drugs, none whatsoever.
Did you have a lot of guys in your club that were, you know, I know that one of the activities, you know, is obviously drug related as far as, you know, moving the drugs or whatever like that. Did a lot of people that were in the club do a lot of drugs?
Well, no, not really, because the club is really structured, a lot of rules. And if you become spun out on anything, it's never good for the club. So, you know, you can't have a guy that's spun out on cocaine, meth, nothing like that. So, you know, if guys did party, and if that was their choice, they had to keep it in perspective, because we were the club being a whole, it was the first one to police you, like, hey, you're out of line here. You know, you get too addicted to anything, you're not loyal to anything but that, you know?
So what would happen if a guy in the club, like, you say, back in the day, if you see one of your guys doing crystal meth regularly or something?
Yeah, if it was getting out of line.
If you think it's a problem.
We grab him in and say, "Hey, enough's enough."
Would you take his colors away? Would you strip him and say, "Look, you fucked up too many times. You're bringing too much heat down on us. You're fucking out of here."
Well, I mean, there has been people kicked out of the club, but I mean, you try not to. You try to help your brother. You know, I mean, he's down and out. If he just got wrapped up in something, maybe he went through a divorce, or you know, he's going to prison, and you're just trying to escape. You got to be the first one there to help him. You always put your hand out.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't want to just, you know, jump on the bandwagon. Ah, we're stripping your patch. Ah, you're fucking up. So you use that as a last resort. You know what I mean? Like, if you get kicked out of the club, it's you screwed up.
Right.
Hey, Carl, you ever seen the show Sons of Anarchy? This is one of my
I've watched
favorite
it a couple
shows.
Times because you told me about it. It's a really good show.
Yeah, I love it. I love the show. And I talked to Mel about it. And, Mel, you actually watched the show also, huh?
Yeah, I started – I didn't really watch much of the first season because I kind of was like – just thought it was going to be a joke, and my ex-chick got me watching it, and I started watching it, and I just got tuned into it, you know what I mean? It was like, it took me into all that shit that's going on in there.
Right.
And you told me you feel like it's pretty accurate. I mean, there's a few inaccuracies, but in general, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah, it's It is. I mean, of course, it's Hollywood and stuff like we talked about. I mean, they killed the ATF agent in the first season, and, you know, nobody even came looking. So,
right.
Yeah, that yeah, that really happens.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think anybody's got their doors kicked in as much as me in person. I mean, I've been raided four times. I mean, kicked in. So I know what them raids are like. You go do something like that, now they're going to kick your whole house in.
Yeah, right.
But I think, actually the show has a couple Hells Angels from the West Coast that are consulting the show.
Right.
So
let me ask you a few things about the show, and you tell me if that happens in reality. Does everything get voted on, like up or down, by the members?
Yep.
So it has to be a majority rule. It's not you, in other words, you as the president can't say, listen, this is what we're doing, that's it.
Nope.
Majority rule. So it has to be. Now, who are the people in the show? Everybody has, I mean, there's like almost like an inner circle that vote. Does everybody have a vote, or is it just this
everybody
inner circle?
Everybody has a vote. Everybody has a vote in the Hells Angels. And, I mean, I don't care if you were a member for 30 years or 3 days. Once you make it, you're a member, you vote. So everybody's vote counts.
And in the Sons of Anarchy, do you think that they're, I mean, are all the motorcycle clubs, do they all work on the same rules, like Sons of Anarchy, or are there different clubs, different rules?
Well, I mean, I think there's a little bit different rules, but the majority of them are the same, you know. I mean, you can put any rule in your chapter you want. I mean, that doesn't disrespect the club, you know, like, you know, we had a rule in Chicago that, you know, we didn't want people dealing dope because it brought too much heat down on the chapter. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So we just didn't need that heat because we were in the middle of a lot of other nonsense. You know, I mean, it was really hectic out here back in the 90s with, you know, shootings and different bombings and stuff like that. So the last thing you want to do is bring more heat, you know, dealing dope or, you know, doing some dumb shit, you know?
Yeah. Do these guys in the clubs, they have normal jobs?
Mm-hmm.
So all of them have normal jobs, or a majority, or how does that work?
Yes, the majority do. The majority have, you know, speaking from back in the day, I don't have no idea what's going on now. Back in the day in my crew in Chicago, and, you know, everybody really worked, you know. I mean, I was partners in a towing business, you know, a little bit of a construction company. So, you know, did I actually work? No, I didn't work, but, you know, I had legal income and, you know, because I did a lot of traveling around the country, but, I mean, ultimately I pled, you know, I mean, it's no secret, I pled to, you know, to narcotics distribution under this RICO statute.
So does that mean you said that it was against the rules to deal drugs. How did that work?
Well, you know, I mean, it kind of was like this. It kind of was like everybody knew what we had to do. And, you know, we just didn't want everybody out there on, you know, on the street selling drugs. And
you mean,
you know,
individually?
You know what I mean? Like,
okay, I got you.
Yeah. So I mean,
not everybody
I,
can't be out there doing their own thing. It's like,
right.
There's
if we
one
had
thing
a whole
and that's
chapter,
it.
Right. You need even keel, you know?
When you make money, it's in Sons of Anarchy, when these guys, they're moving guns in the show, say they make, you know, I don't know, $20,000 selling some guns. Who gets this money? Does this go to the president? Does this get hacked up evenly? How does
no,
that work?
I mean, if you're whatever you're doing is what you're doing personally. So if, say, you're in the club and you're selling guns on the side and you're making, you know, $20,000 a month, that's your $20,000 because
I meant as if the whole club, like they're all running, they're all doing protection or something. Say they're all doing protection and they get paid, you know, $5,000.
Yeah.
Who gets the $5,000?
Most of them were invested with Bear Stearns, I believe, weren't they?
I think what they're doing on that show is they're, you know, running the protection for the prostitutes and everything, and that money is coming back to that, and the Sons of Anarchy, to that chapter, that club. You know,
and they
what I mean?
Divvy it out.
They divvy, yeah, it goes into their, you know, their account. They, you know, it's their bank account. You know, it goes to the clubs, the chapters. So, but, you know, if you're doing something on the side and it's illegal and you're making money from it, you need to keep that person on the side doing it, because once the government finds out you're kicking back or it's in a hole, then you have a RICO conspiracy right there. When you're
well,
paying.
Well, if you find out, if you're the president, you find out one of your guys is doing one of these things, a risky activity of some sort, something illegal. I mean, isn't that something you have to worry about for the club? Because say this this guy, you know, Joe Blow, he gets arrested selling crank, and now he's looking at 10 years, and they say to him, hey, you know,
yep,
look, you know, you can walk from this. All you need to do is give us, you know, such right. and such guy, or Mel Chancy in this case.
Of course, of course. And that's why you really try to stay away from that. If you know, you know. But, I mean, there's no way of saying that he would never say that. Like you just said, anybody could go say that. So, but you just try to shield yourself from it. Unfortunately, it didn't work for me because, I mean, I never got caught with a speck of drugs, but I got the weight put on me by various other people. And then when I sat down, you know, instead of taking the trial, I had to cop a plea and say, okay, I'm going to plead guilty to this.
Right.
You know, I mean, I didn't plead guilty to all the drugs they wanted me to. I told them there's absolutely no way. You got to bring that down. You know, these people come in and make stories up about how much they got from you to look better.
Right.
Right.
So
one thing in the show that I thought was interesting is this, there's a part in one of the, I think it's the first season, there's a guy that they happen to see out that used to be part of the Sons of Anarchy. And I guess they had a problem with him and he quit. He somehow left the club. They see him and they happen to notice that he has a Sons of Anarchy tattoo still on him. Well, they chain this guy up and they cut the tattoo off of him. How does somebody go about quitting a motorcycle club, and what's the deal with the tattoos?
Well, I think that tattoo X is probably prerequisite, right? If you want to, you got to get the tattoo off first, right?
The tattoo on?
No, off. You got to, if you're going to quit, you got to make sure the tattoo comes off somehow. So if
not,
they see you,
no, not off. I mean, you put a date on it, was what they call an out date. So
oh, really?
Quit, yeah, the date you quit is you put it over the tattoo, and it'll say out, whatever, you know, 2010.
Even if you have a bunch of tattoos, you put this on every one of them?
No, you really put it on the one that's the club tattoo that says, you know, the Hell's Angels with the logo and then whatever chapter you're
in. In other words, if you have multiple club tattoos.
Right. You don't have to date them up, but you do it like that. I mean, that show, I seen that one where they did that to him, and, you know, I mean, it looked like the guy probably wouldn't have made it after all that.
Oh, he'd be dead for sure. Sure. He'd be in shock and he would die, I'm sure.
Yeah. So,
I mean, they cut that huge tattoo off his whole back.
Yeah, I seen that one.
I think they might have done it with a blowtorch or something. So.
That probably gave a lot of people a lot of ideas.
They should have used one of those potato skinners. You know, they just peel the skin right off.
So if you had somebody in your club, or you, for example, you're not in anymore, how do you go about getting out?
You just go in the room and quit, man, just like you came in, you know. And the theory there is, you know, you don't want anybody that doesn't want to be around you. You know, be like, you know, if you got a friend and he just comes and says, I don't want to be your friend anymore, you're not going to beg him to stay.
Right.
Say, all right, sorry. So, you know, a lot of guys just, you know, it ain't for them, it don't work out, years go by, or a situation gets put in their life, you know, like it did mine, and, you know, you just say, it's time for me to, you know, head out. And you go and quit and put your out date on your tattoo, and that's it. Everything's, you know, everything's everything.
Well, that's good. You know, I'd asked you earlier if it's like the mob, you know, once you're in, you're in and there's no out. That's, at least it makes sense though. You know, you don't want to be, you know, obviously if you feel forced to stay in, you know, you're probably thinking bad thoughts.
Yes. And there's a lot of TV shows that prove that with the mob.
Right.
Stuff that, you know, they'd have been better off letting some of them guys go, you know?
Right. You're right. So tell us a little bit about prison, man. You did. What's the difference between doing state time and federal time? I mean, what was the difference for you?
Well, the state time is, you know, it's you're usually in your own state, so it's all the local guys from the state. And the fed time, you know, it's everybody from around the country, and they ship you wherever. You know, you don't stay in your state. You usually, you know, if you're like me, they ship you way out of state. They try to keep you within, you know, I believe it's like 100 miles or, you know, maybe 150 miles from your house, but they shipped me to the other coast, so.
Where'd they send you? Lump? To California?
I was in New Jersey.
No shit.
And when I got there, it was cold. It was freezing cold in Fairton. So, but I spent 20 months in the hole by myself in a segregation cell while
my case
was going on. So, you know, when I got over to prison, it was like, you know, a resort for me just to see people and talk to people and, you know, go to school, and I could not wait to get out of that hole, you know.
So it's in state prison. You did 20 months by yourself?
No, that was in the fed. This was last time. This was this time I was away. When I went to the state, I believe it was like 98. I went to the state first. I did 15 months there. So, I mean, back in that
I would think that the state would be worse than federal.
Well, It used to be back in the day, but now you have everything's a federal violation. So now in the federal prisons, you have everybody from the street gangs, the mob guys, the you know, the hardcore street gang crack dealers. I mean, you got everybody in the federal system now.
The white supremacists.
The white supremacists, right. You know, all them guys.
You know why? You know why that is? Because it's a business, and the feds thought, wait, we're not getting our money. We need to make this net broader so that we can grab more people and bring them into the federal side, because that's how they make their money. They get tax dollars for every prisoner they have.
Yeah, well, they're slamming now. I mean, they put everybody away. You know, there's young kids going to the Fed joint with 60 years, you know, and that's 85%.
Yeah.
You get years like that, you know, you got to be a young dude to even come out of that one, you know?
Right.
But getting back to, you know, it is what it's like, the really the streets. You know, you got... You show respect, you get it back, you know.
Did you know a lot of guys when you were at the state prison? I mean, when you were there, I mean, you might have to know people, huh?
Of course, right, because I'm from the biggest county in the state of Illinois, which is Cook County. Just our county jail holds 15,000 people. We're the second biggest L.A. So popular,
B.B. King did a concert there, right? Remember that?
Right, yep.
Yeah.
So every prison I was transferred to, you know, I knew everybody there. You know, I knew the shot callers for all the crews, you know, the Latin Kings, the Gangster Disciples. I knew everybody. So, you know, for me, it wasn't too bad. Yeah, I missed my family. It sucked. I couldn't come home. But it was a little bit easier time, you know, like I tell these kids I talk to. Yes, it was easier time for me because of who I was. I was already, you know, 270 pounds going in there, you know.
So people didn't fuck with you much.
No, everybody. I got along with everybody. I, you know, not a problem. You know, but you got to.
So you never got into a fight in prison?
No, never, man.
Wow.
I mean, some disagreements, like, you know, a couple yelling matches and shit. But then everybody calms down, and you know, it's just, if you're that close to yell around them, it's usually guys you're palling with, anyways.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, all the time that I did, man, never, not one incident, thank the Lord, because, you know, you don't want that headache there. I mean, some people create it, and that's the way they live. They don't know any better. But, you know, when you're coming from having something, luxury and stuff like that, the last thing you want to do is jag that outdate off. You know what I mean? Like, when it says you're coming home in, you know, December of 2009, and it's 2008, and you're acting like an idiot, well, all that time's getting pulled away, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. Everybody, there's a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of drugs in prison. I mean, you must have seen a lot of drugs going around knowing these guys, right?
Oh, yeah, everybody was fuck high in there.
Now, let me ask you, is there any juice in prison?
You could probably get it in there. I'm sure, you know, with the right guard connection and all that stuff like that, but, I mean, I didn't see it. You know, that'd probably have to be a special request, you know? And now, in the federal prisons, they're taking the weights out.
No so, shit?
As they break, they're gone. They don't fix them. So there's federal prisons that barely have anything, a couple of dumbbells.
They don't want these fucking guys getting stronger. I mean, think about it, right? I mean, they you want to make these guys stronger. Because most of the guards, well, I got to believe a lot of the guards are training nowadays because of what they're up against. I'm looking at this picture of you on your website standing next to Jay Cutler. What an impressive physique you have.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Nice work, man.
With Jay.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, if you can hang with Jay, man, you're doing
fuck,
all right.
Fuck, man. His back looks, I mean, almost completely as big as Jay's. Your fucking the front most muscular shot looks great.
That's where you got Jay on, Mel. Your back is probably about the same.
Yeah, for some reason, my back always, you know, I mean, I trained it crazy, and I think, Aaron, you probably know John Hansen.
Yeah.
He's on the boards all the time, yeah. And it was actually John was a training partner of mine. You know, I was a training partner of his. He's a little older than me. And he really taught me how to take it to that next level with training. Like, you know, we pulled everything from the floor for back. I mean, T-bars, bent overs, one arms, deadlifts. And I used to curse him. Every time we'd be in there, I'm like, God damn, John, stop, you know. And he kept saying to me, we'd pay off. And every time I see him, because he's from my hometown, you know, and every time I see him at a show, because, you know, he's sponsored by Optimum and me with Pride, he says, I bet you're glad all that you kept doing all that. I said, yes, I am.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit, you know, on the internet, I saw about I was Googling you, and I saw about how you gave a talk to the Illinois Police Athletic League. You know,
yes.
We could talk a little more positive spin on all this stuff. What you're doing with your, you know, now that you got out, some of the stuff that you're doing, you know, for talking to people.
That actually was that was the police athletic league, and that was for the kids. You know, they got this inner city thing, and the kids come and play basketball and softball and baseball, and you know, they get sponsored by this group. You know, so what I did was they asked me to speak there, so I spoke in front of all these kids and just gave them a rundown of my life, my story. You know, showed them some slides that, you know, old pictures from the day that we had. And I give them a talk, not like a scared straight talk or none of that nonsense. I don't go in there yelling. Aaron, you've seen the pictures. I do go in there in a tank top and shorts. If it's summer out, I'm just being me, and that's what I'm wearing. And, you know, they get to see a visual with me, you know. And I get to tell them a little bit about my life. And, you know, fortunately, I'm still here. I'm not dead, and I'm not, you know, buried under a prison for, you know, 500 years. And I'm able to enjoy my family and walk around, you know. I don't try to talk them out of nothing, because that's the last thing kids want to hear. You know, like you're pointing fingers at them or whatever. I just tell them how my life went, and they're on the streets. A lot of them were, you know, street gang bangers and stuff, and they see that, you know, there's no loyalty there, you know?
Right.
Right. What is the response you usually get from kids when they see you and hear your story?
Well, a lot of them want to start training. It's funny because, they see me with the muscles, and they want to start training. And, you know, I mean, I get to hear later, you know, a lot of them are going to the gyms or back in school training and stuff. And, you know, where they take it is, you know, I mean, if you would have told me that at, you know, 16, 17, 18, I would have just been like, yeah, whatever. I would have had to go do it for myself because I'm a rockhead, of course. But, you know, I think a lot of these kids see it in me, and it wakes them up a little bit, you know.
I can't remember who it was that did this, but for Melvin Anthony had a similar experience. You know, when he was a kid, he was a bad, bad kid, got in a lot of trouble. And I can't remember who it was that he met, but he met somebody, some bodybuilder, and got into working out. And because of that one meeting, he is and he does what he does today.
Yeah.
So you never know. Maybe a future Mr. Olympia is, you know, hearing your story. You never know.
Yeah, you never know who you're touching. One kid out of 400 save a life or not, you know. And, you know, it's kind of like it's rewarding for me a little bit to go there and do it, you know. I do it for absolutely free. I haven't charged anybody anything to do it. And I feel good about myself when I walk out. Just, you know, if it works, it does. If it doesn't, it's unfortunate. But I feel like I'm at least giving something back and trying a little bit because, like I said, you know, I wasn't the best guy back in the 90s. You know, it wasn't like I was out hurting innocent people or anything, but, you know, it wasn't up to me to pick or choose what was going on the way I was, you know?
Right. Let me ask you, Mel, when I looked at the pictures, you know, I see you sitting around with a lot of these police bigwigs and stuff, and does it make you nervous to be around these guys now? I mean,
no, it's kind of actually funny, you know, because, like I said, back in the 90s, I was, you know, the Get Mel Chancy campaign, you know, it really was out here, and, you know, It made me kind of like a half-assed local celebrity, if you want to call it, because everybody knew what I did, and I did it right under their noses, and I was driving vets and choppers and houses and, you know, acting silly. So now to sit there, and, you know, when they're sitting next to me and stuff, it just, I could tell that they look at me in a whole different light. You know, maybe I'm the one who, you know, changed my life and got out of it, or, you know, I don't think they look at me the way they used to. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people still don't believe, a lot of law enforcement that I hear out here still don't believe that I don't mess around with anything no more. But it's been, I've been home from prison for 3 years.
Right.
And, you know, haven't, you know, so a lot of people are behind the times. The locals, you know what I mean? The feds, they all know because they're on top of everything.
Right. How are we looking for time? We got a few more minutes?
We really,
we
need to take a break. If you could just sit through the break with us, okay? Would that work? Okay.
We could, you know, Mel, if you wanted, we could switch to your cell phone if you wanted.
How long is the break?
2.5 minutes.
Yeah, no. You know what? Call me back on this. I got about 10 minutes for you guys for sure.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Okay, so sit tight. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll finish up with Mel Chancy.
Rihanna. Good girl going back. Take three. Action. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans. Periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging is included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today at AaronSingermanFitness@hotmail.com. Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Species Evolutionary Nutrition. The Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com. You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Aaron, you want to do a quick shout out?
No. We'll do it after Mel's done.
Okay.
I don't have time for that. Mel, I just, during the break, I was thinking, and I forgot one of the important questions I wanted to ask you about the Sons of Anarchy. What's the deal with old ladies? You know, this is my old lady, and then these guys are still, you know, fucking other chicks. What's the deal with that, man?
If I'm correct on what I think you're talking about, like the guys got their old ladies, but then they're fucking around on the side?
Right. But it seems like that's like accepted culture. You know, that's normal.
The Guineas started that with the fucking mafia back in the day. You had your Saturday night kumara. You went out with your wife on Friday. Saturday night you went out with your kumara.
Of course. I mean, I think bodybuilding has that.
Oh, shit. Wait a minute. Let's really get down to the lowest common denominator. It's fucking men.
Yeah, for real.
Pick a group.
Yeah.
But in the show, these guys, they're getting a ridiculous amount of ass. Some of them are very unattractive guys, and they're still getting a ridiculous amount of ass. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, that happens, man. You know, when you put that patch on your back and, you know, there's just some girls out there that like that fucking craziness, you know? You know, they just like that. They see that. It equals power. It equals, you know, they know that, you know, you're just not the 9-to-5 dude. And some people are attracted to that.
The ultimate bad boy complex.
Yeah.
So is that, I wonder if that's a motivation for some of these guys to sign up.
I mean, it could be, it shouldn't be. I mean, because a lot of complications come with it. You know, I mean, you shouldn't just be joining a club for that, but I'm sure a lot of people's minds think that way, you know?
Right. I would imagine. I mean, if that's anywhere near reality, you know, I can imagine that would probably be for some guys.
It looks good, but sometimes you got to pay an expensive price at the end, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure, right? That's for
sure. Never know, yeah. So
you were telling me a lot of these guys that did this with you, are either dead or, I mean, back in the 90s, are either dead or in jail forever.
A lot of guys, yeah, a lot of guys that were in the 90s from, you know, that I was with, you know, I mean, with what we were going through, yeah, you know, people got killed, you know, there's guys doing life, and, you know, I mean, when two sides are disagreeing and they're taking it to crazy levels, you know, the government steps in and says, enough of that.
Yeah. You know, Carl mentioned earlier about a picture with you and Jay Cutler. You and Jay Cutler, you're boys, right? This is your buddy.
Yeah, that's my buddy, Jay, yeah. We've known each other quite some years, and it's funny because, you know, like we said, Aaron, we're like the odd couple, man. I mean, we really are. You know, Jay's just, you know, the kid from, you know, out in the sticks out there in Massachusetts, and he married Carrie. You know, that was his girlfriend since he's been 14, you know, only woman in his life. And, you know, you had me, I'm from the fast city and, you know, ripped through 1,000 chicks and mostly strippers, you know. So we got that.
Jay wanted to be in law enforcement, right?
Yeah, Jay actually did. He was studying to be in law enforcement when he was going through college and everything. And, you know, his bodybuilding took him in that different career. Thank God for him. And because he's making far more money now. But, yeah, you know, and, you know, Jay
the opposite. The opposite of law enforcement.
Right, exactly. But Jay is reserved. He's very quiet. He's very, you know, he's coming out of his shell a little bit since he's been getting a lot of attention and limelight. He's, you know, going to Miami here and there, but Jay's still a very quiet person. He's non-confrontational.
He has an acting coach, doesn't he?
Does he have one now?
I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that his ability to speak to crowds and just like has exponentially went up. I remember hearing him speak, I think in 2000 at the Olympia. I think he did like a mini seminar. And he was, yeah. I mean, to say he was bad would be an understatement. You know, it just it seemed like incredibly shy.
Yeah.
Just like wanted to be anywhere but there. And then I was at the LA Fit Expo this year that used to be the Ironman in LA. And
he was selling Amway. He was fucking selling Amway. He was so confident, right?
Yeah, he was, exactly. He could have been. He was up there, you know, bullshitting with the crowd, telling jokes. It was like a different Jay Cutler.
Well, right. He's not working with an acting coach. He's just coming out of his shell. I mean, he's getting popular. You know, like, you know, bodybuilding is in the spotlight now, right? I mean, he was on the cover of Maxim. You see him on the news centers and shit, Mr. Olympia. So he's kind of coming into that now, you know, where he's addressing the public. But I think he's going to start working with an acting coach coming up because of these movies that he's talking about now, you know.
What movies?
I think he's got a he's doing a deal right now to do a Hercules movie. It's
no
gonna be
shit.
The modern day. I think his name's John Hercules, and you know he's going to be like living in the modern day world, you know, bouncing at a bar and whatever the story is.
Fucking cool is that going to be? That'll be awesome.
So, now is this going to? I mean, he's planning on doing this. I'm assuming after the Olympia, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there was a lot of people, there was some talk about, I mean, you know what? I don't need to go into it. I don't want you to have to deny anything. How did you meet Jay originally?
I met Jay actually through Ed Connors, which, Aaron, we had the pleasure of seeing just this weekend.
Yes, he will be a guest on the show next week.
Yeah, great. I mean, he's the best. For people that don't know, Ed, you know, used to own the Gold's Gym in Venice and is responsible for half of the pros coming from different spots in the world to Venice and to California and to doing their career. Mike Matarazzo, Jay Cutler.
Everybody. You name him practically. I mean, he's had PJ Braun over there to stay with him. He's had Evan Santapani. He's had Ben Bukowski. He's had Fuad Abi. I mean, just the list is long, long, long.
Right.
Probably hundreds of guys, I imagine.
Hundreds. And Ed's been doing that ever since, you know. And Ed actually is the one who introduced me to Mike Matarazzo, you know, back in 92, and, you know, I went out there and met Ed, and I was doing a photo shoot for Ed for a calendar he wanted to do, and I met Mike and just prolonged my trip and stayed like an extra week. Mike lived in one of Ed's houses on the beach, and we just kicked it, me and Mike kicked it, and then I got him guest posing gigs out here left and right, and he had met my mother, who was also Sicilian, and she really adopted Mike. That's, you know, that's like his second mother, like, there ain't a week that don't go by that he don't call my house to talk to my mom. You know, I mean, me and him might text a few times here and there. You know, we talk every week, but if we don't, we'll text. But he calls my mother like clockwork, man. And, you know, we just tried to get him to take a flight out here because she wanted to see him because she's 81. So, you know, God knows how much time she has left. But Mike, he can't fly yet because of the medication that he's still taking and everything.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have to talk to Mike for me. I've been trying to get him to come on the show.
Yeah.
I think he still has a lot to give back. I know he doesn't, he's not as much into bodybuilding anymore.
No, I mean,
but I still, I'd love to, I'm sure he's got some great stories. He was the first pro bodybuilder that I ever met.
Really?
And wow. I was blown away, you know, and I, you know, he's partially responsible, at least partially responsible for me getting into all this because he was so nice. I had seen him in the magazines. He was so nice and he spent, you know, probably 20 minutes talking to me and my teenage friend when we were 16 years old. He was guest posing at Mr. Louisiana. That, like, that definitely influenced me to become more interested in the sport because here's a guy I see in the magazines and he's sitting there bullshitting with me at 16 years old for 20 minutes.
He's one of the greatest guys that I ever met. I mean, we'll give you the shirt off his back. We'll anything. I mean, he loved the fans. He's so, I tell him all the time, Mike, buy a computer, first of all, because he's so much of a caveman. And I tell him, go on RX Muscle. There's threads on you all the time. But the gym that he's training at now that he just does his cardio at is a gold. And all the, it makes him feel good because all the young kids come in and say, man, we just seen you on YouTube. And holy Christ, we, you know. So, and you got to remember, I mean, he was a boxer first. So the dude had that warrior spirit. And then this happens to him and takes it out of him and just drains him, you know, physically.
For anybody who doesn't know, Mel, tell us what exactly happened to him.
He had a quadruple bypass in, let's see, I'll tell you the year. I believe it was 03. I think it was 03 he did. You know, he went in congestive heart failure and had a quadruple bypass and went in and had that done. Maybe a year or so later, he had some more. He had to go in and have stents put in. His heart took some damage, you know, and it was down to 20% for a while. And as of about a week ago, he's back up to 35% working. So it's definitely getting stronger. I mean, he doesn't lift any weights really, really light he does, but he does a lot of cardio. He tells me he's the fattest, skinniest kid out there. That's what he says. But he's just, you know, he's still got that mindset. Like when he sees a couple videos or the video I shot with Cutler and we're training shoulders at USA Gym, I mean, he called me up from his garage, and I could just hear it coming out of him. He's like, man, I remember when I used to train with you like that, and man, it's, you know. So for him not to be able to do that, I feel it in him. It really bothers him, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Terrible. I didn't know him on the show. I didn't know that that's what happened to him. I remember Mike, and I didn't know that he had these complications.
Yeah, we need to get him on the show.
We'll get him on, bro. Let me work on him a little bit, and we'll get him on the show because I think he's, you know, now it's years and years later. You know, he doesn't blame nobody but himself. He blames himself. His parents had high cholesterol. He did. He inherited it.
He was a big eater, too, I remember.
Oh, my God. Huge eater.
A lot of meat.
A lot of red meat. That's who got me kicking with this red meat. But I don't have – I mean, I go get my cholesterol checked. I didn't have that hereditaryism like he did. And he got off the Lipitor back in the day because it was killing his joints and he couldn't train the way he wanted to train. And you know, he just said, you know, screw it, and did what he did, and it took a, you know, he got dealt a bad card, you know. So,
right.
But we'll get him on here. We'll work on it, okay?
Okay,
sure.
Great.
Mel, before I have you go, one more question, okay? You got time for one more?
Yeah, one more, no problem.
Okay, one more. My buddy Lou, Louis Yerdell, he goes by the Big Sexy on the board. He said he worked with you at Buzz. You were right. That was the name of the place. Buzz. I guess a club that you used to work at or used to run the security
that's
at?
The one I used to, I ran that one, and then that one shut down about 2 years ago.
Well, he was telling me about I remember I mentioned it to you about the one, the kid that punched you in the chest. I wanted to see if you could tell us that story, and then he told us about a club called Glow, and he said there were fights there all the time you had to, you know, you got involved in.
Constantly, and that was years ago. I mean, now I try not to, but I mean, that incident that he was talking about, I was up in the VIP floor, which is only a couple steps up. There's a railing, you know, so the dude was lower than me, and he was being an idiot drunk, of course, you know, that's how it always happens, and I told him, listen, get out of here with that nonsense, I don't even want to hear it. Well, the guy had punched me in the chest, because that's about the height he was to me. It was really my height when I got down up the steps, but he hit me in the chest, and he ran. You know, and usually at me,
Tag, you're it.
Hey, I'm not trying to run down the driveway. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it stung me so bad that I chased him and I caught him at the top of our stairs. And as I think your friend told you the story, remembers, them stairs were, they were a fall because there was 8 or 9 stairs, you know. And unfortunately for him, I caught him at the top of the stairs and gave him an open-handed smack and it tumbled him down the stairs. But that, you know, that I try not to do that at all anymore because I'm, you know, at this age, the way our joints feel from all this heavy lifting, I'll be hurting myself.
Right, right. How about Glow?
Glow was crazy. I mean, Glow was one of them after hours. Everybody comes in rolling, drunk. The strippers came there because it's a 5 o'clock place. Kind of like I got now.
Yeah.
You know, kind of spy bar. I mean, you know, it's open till 5, so everybody either closes at 2 or 3, some places 4, and we're the last stop, so we get everybody. You know?
I'm really disappointed I didn't go.
Yeah, you guys probably, you would have had some fun, because at 4 o'clock, there's a restaurant above me. And at 4 o'clock, I looked at Dennis, and I said, listen, you got to make a choice. You want to hang out here this last hour, and we're not going to eat? Or we're going to go up and eat and call it?
Fucking eat.
And, you know, me, him, and Marcus Haley said, let's go eat. So yeah. me, him, and my friend Perry, we all went up there and ate and got everybody out of there. I was beat, you know, from Thursday to Saturday from the Nationals, was Junior Nationals was a long time.
Right.
You know.
So at Glow, there's no particular story Lou's talking about. It's just, it was a crazy place like your place now.
Fighting all the time, brother. Fighting. I mean, we fight.
Are there a lot of fights at this place, at Spy Bar?
No, no. But you know what? You know why? A different era of people, a different generation. These new kids that are coming up now that are in their younger 20s and stuff want to yell at each other, and they want to call each other names, bitches and punks and their mother's names and everything. Nobody swings.
Huh.
Nobody. I mean, it's so crazy. I mean, like, I'll stand there for a minute, and I'll see two guys going back at each other, and, like, I want to swing for them.
Let's get this fucking thing started already.
I'm like, let me start this off and sneak a punch in. But, I mean, you know, thank God, because, you know, the door guys don't want to go through all that. Back in the day, I mean, we were getting carafes, glass carafes thrown at us. I mean, we have, you know, black hip-hop, Hispanic hip-hop, Colombian night, salsa night. We have every different night. My owner is my friend, I said, he's the guy who started these different nights. Okay, tonight we're going to have salsa. Tonight we're going to have, and that blew up in the city. Buyers started following his trend, but we were the trend starter, so our places were packed. Just like now, you know, we have, like, tonight actually is the Spanish hip-hop. You know, so 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, that place is going to be rocking.
Yeah.
Right.
With big-ass little booty girls, and you know what I mean?
Wow. Are you single, Mel? I didn't ask you.
No, brother, I'm engaged, actually, man. But I imported my girl, man. I imported a girl from Florida.
Florida.
I'm not fucking with one of these Chicago girls. And if you're listening, no disrespect to them out there, but they're a little bit different out here. They're hard, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hard isn't tough?
Like girls from Brooklyn. You gotta watch.
Yeah.
You know what? It's the girl you want to be with if you get into a fight in a bar.
Yes.
Because yeah. You know that she'll fucking break a bottle and dig it into somebody's neck for you. But she'll do the same thing to you and while you're sleeping if you fuck her up. Yeah.
I went and found a girl down south, down from Florida, and I moved her up here. And you know she's been with me for a year now, and you know just great to me. I mean, just you know, I mean, 10 years ago I couldn't have been with her because you know I had to try to run through everything I could. But now, you know, this stage in my life, I'm happy to come home to her every night and get in my comfortable bed and just not, I like peace in my life now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It did a 180. It did a 180 times 180. I was so running fast and craziness and violence and house raids and hookers in my life to now I'm just, you know, I go to the gym, I train, I come home, I run the nightclub. By 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm yawning, and I come home and eat, and I go off to bed, you know?
Right.
Love and life.
Well, that's good, man. The more stability. Yeah. It's better for bodybuilding anyway.
For real, man.
Well, Mel, we're going to let you go, man. We're definitely going to have you back on because I still have a whole list of stuff to talk to you about. We didn't even get into your bodybuilding, man.
No, we didn't. Well, whenever you guys are ready, you know, in the evenings are good for me. And meanwhile, I work on Mad Mike for us to see if he'll come on.
Hey,
all right, absolutely.
Hey,
man.
Mel, can Aaron and I come to the club and do a live remote one night from there?
Live remote,
absolutely. If you guys want to,
tell the fucking girls these guys are celebrities just from someplace far away that you wouldn't know. That's why you don't recognize them.
Yeah, listen, come in. We'll bring a video camera. We'll do a day in the life of Mel, and we'll come down there, and you guys come down there, and we'll pick Saturday night because that's the craziest night. And
you go.
Sounds good.
Okay, we're gonna make it a date for sure.
You got it, guys.
All right, thanks for being on today, Mel.
Thank you, Mel.
You guys. I enjoyed it, man. Pleasure always.
All right, we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be on with.
Well, we gotta do our shout outs.
We gotta do the shout outs, and then we're gonna have what's his first name? Jerry Magnone?
Jim.
Jim Magnone. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Up the state you trippin' with, yes, I'm the boss. 745, white on white, that's Rick Ross. I cut him wide.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol.
If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans. Periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging is included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today at AaronSingermanFitness@Hotmail.com.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up to the minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Species Evolutionary Nutrition, the Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Okay, are you ready?
Operator!
I just want to remind everybody that PrimordialPerformance.com, Primordial Performance is having their annual summer sale. Everything is up to 40% off. Everything. They've got a great D-aspartic acid product that raises testosterone. They've got a complete vitamin E with tocopherol and tocotrienols in it. And this is the time of year that a lot of staunch Primordial Performance patrons will stock up, because almost half off is pretty impressive. Go to PrimordialPerformance.com and check it out. Their annual summer sale. We're going to do some shout outs. I'll get started here. Who do you want to lead with?
I'll start with RX Muscle.
Okay.
We've got Anabolic Society to do too.
And we also want to give a like a impromptu shout out to Professional Muscle, right?
Yeah, we'll do that after. Okay. So I'll start with RX Muscle.
Okay.
Our countdown man, Green Machine 23, JL Giller, Maz 78, Bellissima, GX, Goddess Amazon, Big Barry Bell, Sally Ann Taylor, my roommate, Jason Newman, Jillian Rev, Italian Muscle 20, The Big King, The Big Sexy, Country Boy, Leatherhead, Ryan Bracewell, Tight Booty, Muscle Mitch, KZ Keith, JYD, Fatback Gold, Duncan 89, Wolverine 565, Kitty Cat, Cat Ramirez, Jaundice McTitties, Andre Gregory, Schmitty, The Same Words, Yukon Crazy, Pygmy, Medium Extreme, PJ Braun, Not So, This Is War, Zane 85, thank you Jeff the producer for putting up the show, Past Genetics, Joe Cristiano, Hammer Strength 12, Natural O, PE Teacher, haven't seen PE Teacher in a while in here, Fire Blast, Warped, I got a few requests from Facebook that couldn't make it to the show, Carl, to the live thread. Big Papa Pump is actually listening on his iPhone right now.
Cool.
Derek Anthony requested a shout out and to plug. If you guys like the old Derek Anthony show, you can listen to the new Derek Anthony show on Blog Talk Radio.
Cool.
And that's it for them. You want to go to?
It's a very short list. Yeah, Anabolic Society. Of course, Overlord, who is probably not listening to this because he said that he wasn't going to listen to the rest of the show. Scottish Muscle, JL Giller happens to be over there as well.
Overlord is, of course, listening. Are you kidding me, Carl?
I know. Caledonian Steel, Haga, American Outlaw, Alex English, and, of course, Natron.
Yes. Over there, Rain Jack always listens. We have a bunch of listeners over there. They like to be critical, but they also listen.
Yeah.
Rob Gun 1, a big, big fan of the show. Always listening. Unsung, remember Method GNA?
Yes, of course.
Swolch, that's, by the way, Rob Gun 1 is not Method GNA or Unsung. Unsung and Method GNA, different people than Rob Gun 1.
Right.
Swole Train, Will Grant, Big Dick Bob, Big Dumbbell, Captain Insano, Rosicrucian, and Will Grant.
Cool.
And Vince Goodrum.
Yes, hey, Vince Goodrum.
All right, and Professional Muscle. Let's see what we got on Professional Muscle. This is a special shout-out. 619 Muscle. I wonder if that's Pete Chacon, you think, Carl?
Oh, man, I wonder if it is.
Yeah, you need to call him.
I called him today and left him a message. I can't get a call back for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
You called him today?
Again, yeah. I've left him two messages and sent him an email. And I know that he opened one of the emails because I got the receipt. I guess he's just really busy. That's all I can think
of. He says right here, 619 Muscle. That's got to be him.
Maybe not.
That he likes the show.
Yeah.
Who else would it be? 619 Muscle is his store. Chris 250 over here. Everybody was saying a bunch of nice stuff at us over here. I'm not going to go through the whole list, but a lot of people saying nice stuff at us at Professional Muscle. If you've never been to Professional Muscle, go check it out, professionalmuscle.com.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we're ready to move on.
Okay. So our next guest is on the line. Aaron, you want to introduce him?
Yes. He doesn't like the title Contest Prep Guru, but in today's nomenclature, that's exactly what he is. And this is Jim Magnon. Sorry, I made to make sure to pronounce that correctly.
How you doing, Jim?
Jim, you there?
I'm doing good, guys. How you doing?
So what do you prefer? What do you prefer over Contest Prep Guru? What do you think is more appropriate?
God.
Okay. That sounds good.
I don't know. The guru thing is kind of gotten a negative connotation, I guess, to it here lately. But I just do contest prep, and I don't know if I really have a title.
I actually found Jim, because I hadn't been to Professional Muscle before, so I found Jim on Get Big. He posted it in one of the threads that a guy Boost on there. He's every time I post any new pictures of myself, progress pictures on Facebook, he makes sure to post them on Get Big so that I can be insulted. But it turns out his motivations are good, so it's okay. I don't mind getting insulted. But Jim came on there and gave me What did you say, Jim? I'll let you tell it.
Well, I was curious as to when your show was, and they were saying something about you never know what's true or not on the site there on Get Big. People like to rib so much, but I wanted to know, you know, kind of where you were at, if you really were sick, and if you wasn't, when your show was. And I was just kind of curious as to I kind of thought you looked, I mean, nothing personal, just as a critique here, I just kind of thought you looked slightly overtrained, maybe a little worn looking. You just kind of looked like you were tired, and your physique kind of looked tired. And in my mind, because I like doing this, I always kind of think to myself, well, you know, what's he doing, and if there is something, you know, a little bit that I could do in my mind, not necessarily offering or even, you know, giving you, saying anything negative, but I was thinking, okay, diet and this, that, and just the way I think. I mean, when I saw your picture.
Well, you suggested that I could be gaining muscle in the process of dieting.
Yeah, absolutely. And
what would he have to change?
Well, it depends on what he's doing now. You know, if I saw his diet and the whole regime, I could, you know, if there's something to fix there, I just did this with a guy like 3 weeks ago, who came to me I'll give the example. We talked about it. My workload is really light this year, so I'm not really kind of training people per se, but anyway, a friend of mine came to me. He's a few weeks out from a show, and he dropped in. He was around 250, I believe. And he didn't think his progress was going fast enough. So I adjusted his diet a little bit, adjusted his supplements a little bit, adjusted his cardio a little bit. And about 2.5 weeks later, he came to me much harder, still at 250. Now, the goal wasn't for him to still be at 250, but that was just, I like to say, a happy side effect. You know, so obviously when you're dropping fat and staying the same weight, you know, you're doing something right.
We're going to come back to that, but I wanted to mention, on Get Big, your screen name is Disgusted.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you get that name? What are you disgusted about?
Well, you know what, and I'm not going to be able to remember the whole exact thing, but I remember, and I really like Lee Priest, but we were going back and forth about something, and I was when I first read the thread, it was something to do with supplements and hormones, and I posted on there, and I was just like, you know, I was a little disgusted about what I was hearing, so I came up with the name Disgusted, and I was still a guest at the moment. And I ended up joining the site, and I just took up the handle Disgusted, which, you know, that's the story there.
Yeah, you can't change it now. It's
no.
you're gonna be disgusted forever.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what you feel like you do for people. You told me that before that when you train somebody, it's not that they don't necessarily know what they're doing, but you act as more of a guiding eye.
Yeah, you know, there's some people I train from total scratch. I've taken people that never entered a show before, even been in a bodybuilding show, and I can do it all, obviously. I mean, I've been in the game for almost 30 years, but my specialty, I guess, is kind of contest prep. And a lot of people that I train, you know, some of the top amateurs or even pros have you, they know what they're doing. They're smart people. But you know, sometimes they may get stuck, and we all do. If I was to enter a show again, I'd probably hire somebody and then say, hey, you know, work with me here and see how things are going. And it's kind of like a guiding eye. The more experienced somebody is, in the bodybuilding field, the less you really do for them. But it's crucial because at the end, as we see, especially today and years ago, this never happened. People miss their peaks left and right. It's a given. It's like playing roulette, and I think it's ridiculous that guys can't hit their peak. When I hear, oh, I missed my peak, I'm thinking, oh, my God, the same. And I feel sorry for these guys. It's not a put-down. And I am disgusted about people ruining 16, 24 weeks of prep because they decided to do a special carb up or one more diuretic or all this other nonsense that people do. Cut their water out 3 days before or sodium load, whatever.
What do you think about that's you know, you're mentioning a bunch of stuff that I have questions about. So when do you not carb load and carb deplete and carb load your athletes?
I've done it before, but I'll be honest with you, as a rule, you know, it's not what I do for them, it's what I don't do, basically. I try not to. You know, I may give them a little bit of carbs before the show, maybe 2 or 3 hours before, if I think they need it. Sometimes it dries you out a little bit more, sometimes it doesn't. It all depends on how somebody's looking when they wake up that morning. I'll give you an example. When I trained King for the well, I don't say I trained
King,
him for
King Kamali. King Kamali.
Yeah, King Kamali. I took over for him one time right after the Europa show. I had 5 days from the Europa show to the Montreal show in Canada. I believe it was 2006, if I'm thinking correctly. But anyway, you know, he I didn't do anything for him. I cut his carbs extremely low and, you know, tweaked his diet, obviously. And the day of the show, the morning of the show, nothing. I did nothing. I think he ate a little bit of carbs before he went out on stage, and that was it. I mean, and he got fourth that year. He came.
Who was he working with before that? Was he working with Chad?
No, right before then, it was Joe McNeil. And, I think he worked with Joe McNeil for the New York show and the Europa show. And, you know, I think Joe did a great job with him, but I think where he kind of messed up a little bit was for the New York show, he came in looking kind of stringy and worn out. And that was the exact words Jim Mannion used. And then for the Europa show, he tried to bring him in a bit fuller. And, I think he over-carbed him. And, King is a very sensitive person when it comes to foods, responding to foods. And, you could give King a piece of pizza and 2 hours later, he's like a road map and he's dry.
Huh. It's interesting because I know. What do you, go ahead, Carl.
There seems to be an emerging attitude about carbohydrates that my earliest recollection was proposed on one of my other radio shows by Dr. Mauro Di Pasquale, and almost seems to be, while not exactly specifically the same, seems to be that Dr. Scott Connolly is leaning towards the same thing, that the post-workout carbohydrate actually is counterproductive, because it's better to stick with fats and protein post-workout to keep insulin sensitivity at its highest and allow the body to go through gluconeogenesis to replenish carbohydrate stores, which a lot of people would argue you really don't blow that much glycogen when you're doing an hour's worth of resistance training.
No. Right. Correct.
What would you say about that?
Well, I actually said that not too long ago. I think it was on Professional Muscle. I'll say hi to those guys right now. Shout out to them guys. I said that you're not using that much glycogen. Your body holds like a few hundred milligrams of glycogen storage, is not counting your liver, which I think maybe holds like 300 grams. I don't know. But anyway, no, you're not using that much. And Mauro Di Pasquale, I think he came up with the anabolic diet, I believe. Where he made his mistake is his fats were too high. I mean, I don't want to get off the subject about what you just said about pre-workout carbs, but I remember the guys in the WBF when they came in looking out of shape. Calories do count to a degree, and I love to go very low, sometimes zero carbs, but near the end of a contest prep, calories do count. But getting back to your question there, I've always preferred, I look at it this way. Let's say you're eating carbs during the day before your workout. Let's say you have some oatmeal in the morning and some rice in the afternoon. And I'm not against carbs. Somebody called me a carb Nazi one time. I don't think they're the devil or anything. But again, let's say you had a couple of carb meals for your workout. If you need to eat a certain amount of carbs to get through a workout when you just had a couple hundred earlier in the day, something's wrong. You know, it's a myth and it's all mental. Now after your workout, I prefer to eat some protein. You know, I mean, I don't get it. Like, I mean, people tend to probably do eat a lot of protein, maybe even too much. But at the same time, your body uses protein to build muscle. You could say, well, carbs spare protein. Well, how many carbs do you need to spare, you know, 1 gram of protein? How many carbs you got to eat to spare 1 gram of protein? I mean, carbs are, I think, overused. And this insulin response is just basically making people fat.
Interesting.
So this comes to an interesting point that me and Jim talked about earlier. Jim, you're not a big proponent of insulin use.
No, I'm not 100% against it. Let's just say 99. I've seen guys use it, and I've seen the physiques slowly grow distorted in the abdominal area. I believe it's visceral fat that's happening, and I believe I believe there are certain body parts that are that have fat receptors in them. And for example, everybody's coming in with striated glutes, but you don't see any striations anymore at all in the shoulders, in the chest, in the triceps. And I think what's happening, and this is just my theory, but you know, I'm pretty sure in all modesty that I'm probably correct on this. I think that what's happening is the insulin is marbleizing the fat.
Muscles. Yeah.
And it's more in the definition. And I think it's a receptor thing. Cause like I said, everybody's coming in with striated glutes, but they're everything else. They look like big balloons. I mean, Now, as far as a visceral fat go, you see these guys with distended abdominal walls. If they could get an MRI, I would be positive you're seeing a visceral fat behind the abdominal wall. A lot of guys will argue, well, visceral fat will be the first thing that you'll lose on a diet. Well, of course it will. But when you're slamming 40, you know, I use insulin a day, your body will not lose that because you keep putting back the response of storing visceral fat because of the insulin you're using. And I want to tell you this too. You know, look at some of these guys with beer guts. You know, they're the hops and the grains in the beer. These guys, if you try to pinch fat in their stomach, you couldn't pinch anything, but their stomachs are extremely hard and distended. Same thing. It's insulin. It's insulin. Whether you're using insulin or if it's your own body's production, your pancreas, it's visceral fat storage, and it's overproduction of insulin.
You know, it's hard to even ask the question I'm going to ask, but only because the bodybuilder of today and the Renaissance bodybuilder are so dramatically different, mass wise. But guys like Geronda used to espouse just eating twice a day, and they built great physiques, very realistic and very maintainable physiques. Do you think that? First of all, do you think that the bodybuilders of today are just eating way too much, number one? And number two, do you think that most of them are probably, completely insulin resistant, pre-diabetic because of the sheer amount of calories that they consume every day?
Absolutely. The reason that most people on the planet are type 2 diabetics is because they've been eating way too many carbohydrates, and not even bodybuilders, just the general public. They're eating so much sugar, their pancreas has just given up. And if you look at a graph and you see the consumption of sugar per year as it goes up to 140 pounds per year, I think it is where it's at now for the average person, you'll see diabetes going up right with it. And bodybuilders are now, there could be an argument here that because the bodybuilders are taking insulin, that they're saving their pancreas from all the unneeded sugars. And I agree with that.
I would disagree with that, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Excuse me. The liver, the receptors in the liver that are monitoring, first of all, our pancreas oscillates insulin production. It doesn't burst it, and it doesn't pulse it. It oscillates it. And the liver is in complete synchronization with what insulin is supposed to be coming down the line. And when you inject, you basically create a depot, albeit very small, not like an oil depot in the muscle, but you create a depot. And that insulin trickles out. And then when you're using long-acting insulins, it's constantly occurring. And as a result of the liver seeing those changes, there are all sorts of metabolic issues that arise from using that the pancreas ends up paying for.
Okay. Now, when you say, I don't want to make sure I understand you 100% when you say that. So you're saying that even if somebody was to use a little bit of insulin with their biggest carb meals, it's more detrimental to the pancreas.
Yes, it will damage the pancreas because the pancreas and the liver play a very, very special dance together, managing and monitoring and then evacuating insulin from the body. And the pancreas oscillates insulin in like a waveform, and the liver is prepared for that. The liver is not prepared for the onslaught. So what ends up happening is, the liver feeds back to the pancreas, and I'm not adept at explaining what happens at the pancreas at that point in time. But individuals who use insulin, like type 1 diabetics, well, I take that back because their islet cells are pretty much shot already. But type 2 diabetics that go beyond the management protocol of you know, glucophage and metformin and so on and so forth, their pancreases stop working completely in the presence of insulin, and it's not because the pancreas is like, oh, fuck it, I'm on vacation. It's because there's this very delicate feedback that occurs between the pancreas and the liver. And when you impair that, the pancreas checks out.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that in the oscillation where you were talking about, I think it's interesting that if you shoot testosterone, your testicles stop producing them, where your pancreas doesn't. And it's always there and always present to work when you and in the long run, I will say this, I'm surprised I don't see too many bodybuilders who are diabetic, but I've known plenty of people to use insulin for a long time and they quit it and they're fine. Of course, you know, long term, I mean, we're talking, you know, many years down the road, I don't know where they're going to be standing, but, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road, I've known people to quit it and still be totally fine. But
and that may partially be mitigated by exercise in general, because when we look at a lot of these epidemiological studies, we're looking at general population. We're not looking at a guy who's going to the gym and training to such an extreme degree, because we know that in the presence of high anabolic steroids, insulin resistance occurs, and we know that the sheer amount of calories that a bodybuilder takes in would precipitate insulin resistance, yet they don't become completely insulin resistant, because I really believe that there's a mitigating factor, and that's exercise.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in today's bodybuilding, you know, like you said about it, the size game and everything everybody's playing, I think insulin is just basically overused and overabused, and I don't think people are relying on it. I hear a lot of guys saying, oh, my anabolics are really low, my androgens are really low, and I don't take much, but they don't tell you about the insulin they're using. There's different theories how to use it, when to use it. You know, some guys are actually using it one day a week, maybe three times a day. Some guys are injecting it sub-Q. Whatever happened to the old standby anabolic steroids? I mean, you know, and they increase, you know, it tells you right in the literature, you know, increase your protein intake. It's a no-brainer.
Right.
I think sometimes people are losing sight of what they're, you know, of what they're really doing. It's not rocket science. It's a lot of common sense. You know, you're
right
in the gym, you lift weights, you build, you lift weights, you eat correctly, and if you want to go the route of using hormones, then you do. But things have changed today in bodybuilding, and everybody's looking for that extreme size. But I still don't think, if you notice the last few shows, and I don't follow them as close as I used to, but I've seen guys' stomachs come down. I've seen their waist started getting tighter and stuff. And it's definitely because the insulin, and I know this because I talked to some of these guys, they're not using the insulin like they used to.
Right.
I wanted to ask, you know, when we had Kevin Lavroni on the show, he actually, I believe he asked me or asked us, what we think the difference is between the early 90s, you know, when he was in the 90s, I guess, in general, between the condition that those guys got in, the Flex, you know, Sean, himself, Kevin. If you look at those guys then, even like, you know, Lee Labrada, those guys, the difference in, like you said, the striations everywhere compared to now, I mean, there's some oddities. You know, we got a few guys like you know, a few guys with striations everywhere, but it's a rarity. You think that the insulin is the main culprit behind this?
Absolutely, yeah. I really do. There's no other reason. I mean, we talked about testosterone a little bit and you know, things that are being used more, but the insulin, yeah, you can see the physiques change. And a lot of guys will say growth hormone, but growth hormone was being used years and years ago in the era of, I mean, when Stridham supposedly was using a ton of it, and he still came in very, very hard, very striated. But it's the insulin, I believe, that's blurring the muscle definition. And again, it's doing it within the muscle itself. It's marbleizing the fat within the muscle, and you're losing striations.
There are a few guys like Ruly Winkler. You know, I don't know if he's not using the insulin or what, because he's one of those rare guys. You know, with the striations in his triceps and.
Yeah.
Super, you know, he's got almost a classic like look, but he's still pretty round though, you know.
You know, when guys first start using insulin, I'll say this: it's a very positive thing for them. They get bigger and fuller. The striations are still there, but look at guys throughout the years. Look at guys that, you know, after 4 and 5 and 6 years of insulin use, their physiques are changing. Their obliques are getting bigger. Distension in their stomach, they're losing definition, they're just looking like these big blown up balloons. And if that's what you want to, you know, if that's the route the bodybuilding is going, you know, that's fine. I'm not a judge. And, you know, if that's what they want, more power to them. But I prefer the look of the late 80s, early 90s. I like that super full, very deep separation striated look. I think of Kevin Lebroni when I, you know, I look back in early Dorian Yates. You know, Ronnie Coleman back in the mid 90s, late 90s even maybe, but, anything after that, you're just getting distortions and everybody's just trying to get too big for their frame and it's not working.
Let me ask you about a particular athlete and what went on with him. Get your opinion. Dennis Wolf, you've seen what's transpired with him over the years, and, Dave and John recently had, Well, actually, he had two of his contest prep guys on. He had Chad Nichols on, and then more recently he had the other guy, I can't remember his name, Tudor. Peter Tudor or something like that. I don't remember his name. Anyway, they had both of these guys on. His name is Dennis. Anyway, so and Chad talked about him, you know, placing, I think, fourth, I think, in the Olympia in 2007. And then he felt like he was too flat, and then he carved up. It sounded like Chad was carving him up with, you know, several thousand grams of carbohydrates a day for part of the carb up process. And then Dennis went ahead and ate 200 oatmeal cookies extra over the process of his carb up because he didn't believe that Chad was filling him up enough. What do you think about, I mean, you said you don't even barely do the carb up. Why would somebody like Chad carb somebody up with, you know, I mean, he's a really big guy, obviously, but why would he carb him up with so much, you know, 2,000 grams in a day?
You know what? The reason I think Dennis didn't believe is Dennis carved up on 5,000 grams of carbohydrates over, I forget how many period of days, when Milos trained him. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I know this for a fact. So when Chad took over, I'm sure he thought, gee, this isn't enough. Now, we just talked about how many grams of glucose the muscles can store in the body. I mean, they're going way over and above that. You know, nothing against these guys. We all got different theories. And I trained King Kamali after Chad trained him, after Joe McNeil. Milos took over for one show, and he did the Ironman with him when I was kind of in a sabbatical. Then I took over for King's last show in Atlantic City a couple years ago. But if you look at these guys, if you look at the pictures, and I'll use King as an example because he's the only guy that I've trained, all these guys I've trained too. If you look at King, and again, I say this all in modesty, but look at his physique. Look at pictures. He's much harder and much drier. And, you know, King will listen. You know, if you tell him something, he's going to listen. And he's going to, you know, even though sometimes he'll go, hey, Jim, you know, are you short? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. Either do it or don't do it. But that's, you know, it's my way or the highway. And I know what happens when these guys start carbing up on insulin. They spill over and then they take diuretics. And, you know, it's too late, man. It is too late. I one time training somebody, I did that. I listened to this kid. He was coming to my house. He was local, and he was getting harder and harder and harder by the week, and it was amazing. And he swore to me he couldn't diet on no carbs, but I don't do exactly no carbs. There's more to it than that. But anyway, he was getting harder and harder, and he says, I want to carb up on insulin. I want to do what Milos does. And I knew what Milos does. I says, I'm telling you, I want to do it. Anyway, long story short, we did it. He put on 13 pounds over so many days, spilled over so bad, it was too late. Nothing I could do. The good news was that he placed third, and he wasn't going to get second or first, no matter what, anyway, because those guys were so far above him. So, but it was a loss to me because in my mind I should have told the kid no. I was more unhappy than he was. It's a crapshoot, Aaron. It's a crapshoot that when you carb up like that, I've seen it happen. I don't care who it is.
Hey, let's go to a break real quick, Jim. When we come back, we'll talk some more.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol.
If you're stuck in a rut, looking to compete, want to make your mark in the fitness industry, or just want to look your best, Aaron Singerman can help. Sign up for 12-week, 24-week, or full-year training packages. All packages include training, diet, supplementation, and hormone optimization plans, periodic and regular phone consults, email communication, and text messaging included in all plans. Contact Aaron Singerman today
at AaronSingermanFitness@hotmail.com.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Species Evolutionary Nutrition. The Species line of products champion original thinking and carries that thought process to its logical conclusion in the form of unique supplements that strictly adhere to the core nutritional principles of Dave Palumbo, founder of Species Nutrition. Visit SpeciesNutrition.com to purchase the next generation of high-quality supplements available today that fully adhere to the theory of natural selection, which insists that only the fit survive. SpeciesNutrition.com.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Make a clap to this. Make a clap to this. Make a clap. Make a clap to this. Make a clap to this.
To show our appreciation for your support.
Welcome back to Off Topic Radio.
Thank you, DJs.
Our guest this hour is Jim Magnone. The artist formerly known as the Contest Prep Guru, no longer known as that. Like the artist formerly known as Prince.
There you go. I'm famous now.
There you go.
Hey, Jim. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about King Kamali. You and him, are you still working with him now?
No, not. I'm not working with him any longer. I heard through the grapevine that he may be competing again next year.
Oh, I've been seeing pictures on Facebook and stuff. He's like 320 pounds or something now. What do you think of that?
You know what? I heard somebody, one of my buddies who's, I think, friends with him on Facebook said that. What do I think about it? I'll tell you what I think about it. What I told him over and over, it's a mistake for anybody to get that heavy if you're ever going to compete again. And obviously he must if he's that heavy. And again, this is not just him, but, I'd rather see somebody lose 50 pounds between shows than gain 50 pounds.
Really?
Stay lean. If anybody's listening out there that really wants to take their career seriously in bodybuilding, whether it's amateur, local shows, or pro, stay lean. Stay in shape. And when you grow your muscle, when you grow, you'll know you've grown. You won't have to guess because it's under 4 inches of fat.
Good point. Really good point.
Thank you.
So, why did you all stop working together? What was the breaking point?
I'll say there's been a lot. I've been asked that many times, and it's not a big, huge story or a big mystery or anything. But we started a supplement company, Genetic Breakthrough Nutrition, and basically we just didn't see eye to eye on the market.
This is the company that sold or sells Plasmosis.
Plasmosis,
correct?
Right. And we started together, and we just didn't see eye to eye on the marketing and the formulation of the product, and that's okay. I mean, but we went our separate ways, and he ran with it. I don't know where he's at with it now. I haven't followed it, but you know, we were friends for a very long time, and sometimes that happens. Unfortunately, you know, you mix business with friendship, and doesn't always work out. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate.
How did you meet him?
I met him at the Arnold Classic, and I believe it was back in 2000 at the Europa booth. I was a vendor, so I'm sure Europa has this huge booth every year for their event.
We go to all their shows now. I'll be in Connecticut for their show, and I was at Orlando, and then we have one every year here at Dallas.
Oh yeah, and I was dealing with Jeff and Eric since they were selling out of their apartment even before they had official company, but. yeah, I was there. I met him there, and we got to be friends and, you know, went from there. And I was friends with him for years before I even started training him, but it was frustrating to see him, you know, go downhill. And that's no offense to him. I mean, he worked his ass off, but,
That's what I was leading up to, actually, Jim. No offense to King Kamali, you know, I would still very much like to have him on my show, have him on here to talk to him. I got a lot of good questions for him, and maybe if he's listening, he'll reconsider. He didn't want to come on because he doesn't like John Romano, which actually has nothing to do with me and Carl, but he was convinced that since we're, you know, I guess, would you say, Carl, we're affiliated with John?
What, is that what he said you're saying?
He won't come on our show because of John Romano.
Well, right, and they a lot of people think that we are an RX Muscle in-house product.
Which we're not.
Right, we're not.
Yeah. Sure not. We are hosted on RX Muscle, the site.
Right.
So we're not paid by them or anything like that. We don't pay them. But a lot of times people get – so he didn't want to come on our show. But back to the point, Jim, when he got his pro card at that point, and for about a year or 2 years after, he was making progress, looking better every time.
And then we lost Aaron due to technical difficulties. But what do you think he was going to go with that question?
Well, he was probably going to ask if what do I think happened, maybe why he, and I think we were talking about his training earlier about, you know, his physique and training. And I said, basically, I don't know what happened exactly with him and Chad, but they his showings weren't as good. Each time he would train him, he just got a little worse, and he was just missing his peak. And, you know, Chad, each one of these contest press gurus, they have their little things they like to do. One guy may like to have you use a lot of carbs, another guy a lot of diuretics. And I'll tell you something, that doesn't always work each time exactly like it did before. You get older, your metabolism changes, you don't respond to the same type of drugs each time. And especially when you're dealing with things, not steroids, but especially when you're dealing with diuretics and things of that nature that respond quickly in the body. Again, it's like throwing the dice. And we also talked about, you know, injuries and different things like that. But we're
well, Aaron, Aaron is back. Aaron, did he answer the question that you were trying to ask a second ago?
What happened when I got cut off, Jim, was I was saying, sure. What do you think happened to King? How did he go from placing in the top 10 at the Olympia? I believe he placed in the top 10 once at least, to deteriorating like he did. His, you know, he went from being, you know, a top 10 guy to somebody that was, you know, nowhere near. How does a bodybuilder like him, a top level bodybuilder, who I assume is doing all the same drugs as everybody else, is training very hard? I've seen his videos. He trains hard.
Yeah.
He has the best help available. You, Chad. I mean, the list goes on and on. He's used everybody. Milos. He's used, you know, so he's got the best help. How does somebody like him get progressively worse as opposed to progressively better?
You know, King listens to his trainers, and I think that I'll just lump a few thoughts here. I'll lump some of the trainers together. I guess when you train somebody, you have to train them on their level. In other words, if I give 10 diets to 10 people, one and two guys get shredded and win a show, I can't forget about those other eight. I mean, if I put you on the same diet as another guy and 2 weeks later, the diets are going to change. I could all start you out in the same road, but you know, you're going to take, it's like a tree branch. You're going to take separate branches and go your separate ways after a while. So my point I'm trying to make is with King is, you know, when a trainer's doing the same thing with him as he is with his other guys, because everything's been working really good, then all of a sudden you find that what you've done for this guy isn't working. Or even if you've done for this guy and it worked before, it isn't now, and you get stuck and you don't change, or you don't care enough to find out why it isn't working, and the guy still listens to you and has that much faith in you, then that's what happens. So that kind of in a roundabout way is what was going on. He wasn't responding, and I was there. I was there at some of his shows, and I could tell that things weren't. I mean, I saw him for one show. I think it was the Arnold Classic back in 2005, I believe. I saw him lose, like, I think he was two. When I got there on Wednesday night, he was 248, and I think he was 228 or 225 Saturday morning. It was something ridiculous. And I remember walking into his room, and he was so just drawn. And, you know, how can that happen? I mean, I don't. Maybe I'm. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I just don't see what the need for this stuff. You never heard about guys missing their peak back in the 80s. Well, I missed my peak, man. I was ready the night before. You should have saw me. Well, you know what? That was the night before. And I just don't get it. I did another, and gaining muscle and losing fat, like we talked about earlier, at the same time. That's a given to me. I don't see why somebody can't do it. I've been doing it with my clients for a long time. Then all of a sudden I hear you can't do it. Well, then I'm going to start believing it.
Right. With King, what was the deal when he first came out? And I guess throughout his career, but mostly when he first came out, he talked a lot of smack. And I actually brought some excitement to bodybuilding at the time.
Yes.
Because there wasn't a lot of out-and-out smack talking going on. So how did that happen, and were you friends with him at the time?
Yeah, I was. And, you know, King is in real life is a different persona. I mean, it was kind of like the wrestling smack talk, you know, and it did. It brought a lot of excitement and things like that, but people were taking it seriously. And I think some of it was serious, but a lot of it wasn't either. And I saw King with his fans in, you know, in real life at shows and interacting and everything. And I got to say, you know, no matter how we feel about each other right now, he was very good to his fans. Never, ever did I see him refuse to sign an autograph. I've seen him give away free CDs, DVDs and pictures at shows, not even charge. Treat his fans really good, I will say that. And, you know, but the smack talk was excitement, but I think it was taken a little bit too far. And he probably knows that.
Well, it got taken too far because he couldn't back it up. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. He couldn't back it up with his physique. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't, again, it wasn't because he wasn't working hard enough or doing what he was told to do. He was. I mean, I know he was. And unfortunate, very unfortunate, because he could have went a different route. He really could have. I think he could still be doing, you know, maybe not right today, but, you know, 2-3 years ago, he could have been top five at the Arnold easily if he would have stayed on the path he was around 03 at the Night of Champions and kept progressing in that way. He would have, definitely made a top five bodybuilder.
What was going on behind the scenes with King Kamali and Craig Titus? I mean, now after the fact, after everything's over, Kamali's got to feel kind of lucky that he didn't really piss Titus off too much, because Titus could have killed him.
You know, that was real. Unfortunately, that was real. And I don't know Craig at all, but they were at shows a couple of times together, and they kind of avoided each other because
Craig would have fucking attacked him. You know what I mean? Like he was no joke. You know,
Craig was a little bit more serious about violence than probably.
Oh, definitely. Well, now we know that for certain. I mean, because you know what happened. But Ed Connors, I was talking to. You know, Ed knew Craig really well. He had Craig at his house, and you know, he owned the Gold's Gym Venice Beach. He said he had kicked out Craig for beating people up. More times than he's ever kicked anybody out for anything.
Yeah, well, Craig was a hothead for sure. I've never seen King fight or anything like that. But I'll say this: knowing King as well as I do, he wouldn't have backed down from him. He would have went right after him. And I don't know who would have, you know, who knows what can happen in a fight. But that's one thing I don't really know what happened. King's a pretty strong guy, and I know that he wouldn't have backed down. I can at least say that much.
Oh, that would have been interesting. That's for sure.
It would have, and now we'll never know unless CNN has a all points bulletin out that Craig's escaped from jail.
Yeah,
I heard he doesn't train anymore. So,
yeah, I don't think. Yeah, Craig looks like a different guy.
I actually, 2 years ago, I did a special episode of Superhuman Radio where I interviewed the fella from the Las Vegas Sun newspaper who wrote the book Fire in the Desert, which is the whole story about the Craig Titus and, you know, Kelly's the whole thing there. And as part of the deal for promoting him on the show, I asked him for some, you know, never before heard clips of phone conversations, because they had all these phone conversations that Craig made from jail taped. You know, they tape every conversation from jail. So, and this guy happened to have like all of the tapes. And one of the conversations that we had was a conversation with Craig and his sister. And he was telling her how much he enjoyed smoking cigarettes again, and he doesn't even train, and he doesn't even care about lifting anymore. It's all bullshit. And it was really funny to hear.
Well, of course he's going to say that now because he's not able to do any of that stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, I know. That's called cognitive dissonance. But, I mean, I'm just saying, I'm pretty sure that at that point in time, at least, he had stopped training, and I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. You never seen the video of him getting pulled out of his cell, Carl?
The one where they have him strapped to the chair? Or
yeah, you never seen that video?
Yeah, yeah. He's withered away, yeah.
Yeah, he's well, but what do you expect?
And he had, you know, when you first saw him get arrested, he was pretty jacked, and then not much longer after that, he was pretty, you know, of course you stop lifting and you stop using what you're on and you shrink up, obviously.
Pretty quick.
But stop eating too. I mean, I'm sure he's not able to get in, 6,000 calories while he's in jail.
Exactly. Of course,
he's not that fucking tough where he can start taking everybody's food in jail.
I don't know, Carl, if he would make any friends that way.
Yeah, no.
He's going to be there a long time.
Right.
So, Jim, let's talk a little bit about your use of diuretics. You keep saying, that you make it sound like you're not big into diuretics. What's the deal with that?
Well, you know what? You tell me, how many times have you seen somebody 10 days out, 7 days out, and they're dry as a bone? And here, they look good. I mean, when I'm training somebody, 2 weeks out, they better be pretty damn ripped. And then from 2 weeks to the show, then you kind of just coast in a little bit and you're very careful. And I'm going to tell you what you're going to lose a little bit of definition. You're going to gain a little bit in those last 2 weeks. It's going to be, up and down, very slightly if you look out on a graph. It has to be because you're so lean, your body constantly fluctuates. But what you want to do is you want to ride that wave and you want to just wake up very dry. You know, I've seen lots of guys take diuretics the night before a show. Let's say they're just a little bit, and I'm nitpicking here. I'm splitting hairs because when you're that lean, you can see the water under the skin. And let's say a guy the night before the show says, dude, I'm holding a bit of water. I should take a diuretic or diazide, whatever, Lasix. And I'll wake up really ripped. Well, you have a tendency to wake up, I'm sorry, dry. You have a tendency to wake up dry anyway.
Right.
So you over, and that's the biggest mistake guys make, take a diuretic right before they go to bed, and then they wake up and they're flat as a pancake.
Right, because you dry out in sleep anyway. Your body regulates aldosterone at night while you're sleeping, and it's trying to pull sodium out of you anyway.
Right. I'm going to tell you what, trying to mess with the aldosterone levels and the way your body fluctuates water, it's a losing battle because the body wants to keep the sodium-potassium levels balanced, and it'll do anything it has to keep that balance because it's either that or you're dead. And it doesn't care how you look. So these guys that are trying to manipulate their sodium, potassium, things like that, it's a losing battle. They may wake up one day and say, oh my God, I hit it perfectly, do the exact same thing the next time and it fails. Now, at all costs, I don't like using diuretics. And if you ride that wave and you time it right, as far as a natural occurrence of lack of water under a subcutaneous, under the skin, then, it's easy. It's easy to do. But, like I mentioned to you earlier, when using diuretics, the water comes out of the muscle first, and then it goes last under the skin. But when you start drinking water again, it almost kind of is the opposite way. You blur first under the skin, and it's again, it's not exactly like this. But once you spill over, it's over. You're done. You can do nothing. I don't care how many diuretics you take; it's not going to happen. So you're going to miss the beat.
So with the diuretics, what about in between the prejudging and the night show? Do you take a diuretic then?
No,
or you just keep the water out.
I use my wife as an example. I don't know if you guys are on. I mean, you could look at a picture of her for her last show. It was the 93 Nationals, was it? 93 Nationals. Yeah, 1993 Nationals. She was a lightweight at the time. And she was shredded, and I don't say that lightly. Her glutes
What's your wife's name if they want to Google her?
Heidi and Magnone. And Google her up. If you can find a picture of her, there's a back double bicep, which is most impressive. And if you look at that picture right now, if you can find it, and I'll tell you this.
Was it from 2004?
No, that's when she made her comeback and won the NABBA Figure America. She got to bug up her ass and decided to lift for 11 weeks. And
what year was this that we're talking about?
After 11. 93 is when she was really ripped for the Nationals. She got sixth that year. The year before, she got second. But no diuretics in her. None. In fact, to answer the question, she never cut her water ever. She drank water freely. She never cut it ever.
You know who's a big proponent of that? Now I'm going to forget his name. Isn't that funny? The guy from University of Chicago, Lane Norton. Lane Norton. He's another one who says you don't stop drinking water all the way through.
She didn't stop. She flew down to Florida that year, And, I mean, and that's another reason you don't want to stop drinking water, because you're on a plane. Dehydrates you anyway. But, you know, she was, I'm talking, you know, when I say you ripped, I'm talking extreme, like everywhere, striated all the way up the top of her glutes. Now that was diet. That was extreme dieting. She weighed 112. You know, she wasn't a huge person muscularly, but she was shredded. Brachialis was in, striated triceps up and down both sides. But the water, no diuretics and no water. And I'm going to tell you something else. I don't care if you'll believe me, because it doesn't make no difference to me, but no fat burners.
Really?
Nothing. You know what? And again, if anybody out there is listening and they want to, there's no secrets, but let me tell you, 99% of this competitive bodybuilding is diet. So many people stop dieting when they're almost ripped, and they say, dude, you're shredded. You're not shredded. You ain't seen shredded until you've seen striations everywhere on a person like Munzer. I mean, that's shredded. You got to get all the fat off you. I don't care what drugs you're taking. If you want to take androgens to actually, you know, people say, well, androgens make the muscle harder. You get that dense look. Well, yeah, but put some fat over it. You know, here's an analogy. Look at your window in your house, and if your glass has a little bit of film on it, you can't see out of it.
Right.
You take that little thin film off of there with some Windex, and bang, you can see everything. And that's the way it is. We keep that last little bit of fat off that people don't want to do, and they don't want to suffer. They want to try to find the drug. They want to use DNP, or they want to use Clen or extra fat burner, and they want to make it easy, and it's going to be a miracle, and it's not. Or that, or I'm going to use Trenbolone, and I'll really be ripped. Buddy, it's diet, period. And that's what I do. I diet these guys until, and forget about what you weigh. That's another thing I wanted to touch upon. Who cares how much you weigh? I weigh 280. So what? You're fat. You've got about 210 pounds of muscle on you. You know, who cares what you weigh during a show? Come in and say, what should I compete at weight-wise? I don't care. Come in. Now, if you're extremely close to a weight class and say a heavyweight, super heavyweight, whatever, and you happen to know that there's like 50 guys in the heavyweight and you've got a pound and you can, well then, okay. That's different. You can pick your weight class. But, diet all the fat off and you won't have any water, period.
Wow. Aaron, did you disconnect again? Yes, we lost Aaron, but that's okay because we're coming to the end of the show anyway. You know, you make a really good argument, and I'll tell you something. Do you know Randy Roach?
No, I don't believe I do.
Randy is writing a second volume of a book called Muscle Smoke and Mirrors, The Nutritional Origins of Bodybuilding, because he goes all the way back before Rio Blair, before all of these guys. I mean, back in the day, and these are the guys who said, you know, the answer is proper nutrition. There's no doubt about it. You look at Gironda. I mean, look at the level of conditioning that Vince Gironda came in without all the drugs and without all of the, you know, secret potions and special supplements. I mean, these guys were able to come in. Okay, they may not have been
able
to.
You don't think Vince Gironda took any drugs, Carl?
I don't think he did. I mean, he may have. I don't know. I don't think he did. I really don't.
I'll interrupt, but I will tell you, Vince Gironda, you mentioned him twice now, was one of the first guys that I read all his manuals when I was a kid. When I was getting into bodybuilding when I was 13, I bought them all. And that's where I learned a lot of my stuff from. And people could laugh. They used to laugh at me when I was, you know, starting to lift and compete. And I competed first in 82. And I was eating nothing but like zero carbs. I was, eating whole eggs and red meat.
Were you drinking the raw cream? Because he was a big advocate of unpasteurized milk and cream.
I did in the off season, but when I was training for a show, I just strictly did meat and eggs.
Right.
And I did a carb up every third day, one meal. But see, now I do things a little bit differently. I actually do a carb up, and I've been doing this for a very long time. I carb guys up on Saturdays, sometimes every meal, sometimes every other meal. It depends on the person, how big they are.
Clean,
you know.
Clean carbs or cheat?
No. Actually, I prefer, I'm giving all my secrets away here, guys. I prefer to have guys eat burgers and fries and like fats and carbs, not just carbs. They digest too quickly and they pass through the body too quickly. You got to throw some fats in to actually make this stuff stick. And you know, there's three things that's going on here. Number one, it's speeding up your metabolism. You're really holding on to some glycogen, which is a good thing too, but it's secondary. And also, it's giving a guy a break mentally too, which I don't care about that. As far as I'm concerned, if you're into bodybuilding, you better suffer. Suffering's the fun part to me. That's when I was competing, I loved to suffer, but whatever. We're all masochists to a certain degree, I think. But yeah, the carb up, it serves a more than just a dual purpose. And, I found that it works best. Now, sometimes I'll do a Wednesday one meal. And again, it depends on the person, how they're progressing.
if they're coming along slowly though, if they're not ahead of schedule, you only do it once.
Right.
I mean, you only do it on the Saturday. I mean.
Yeah, usually on a Saturday is just when I do it. There's an exception. If some guy's actually leaning out too quick, or I could always add calories, but sometimes I'll throw a Wednesday meal in and see what happens. Again, there's a certain amount of trial and error, but it's a controlled trial and error, because I know I'm going to do this, or this. It's not like I don't know what I'm doing, or I got 20 things to do. I have two or three different things, and I work with people on an individual basis. I let Chris 250 on Professional Muscle post all the diet changes out in front there, because it didn't matter if somebody else did them. They weren't going to work for them like they did him. Now, would they work? Sure. But, everybody, like I said earlier in the show, everybody's going to progress at a different rate, and you have to know, as a trainer, when to make the adjustments. That's the secret, by the way. If you want to know, if a person's a good trainer, they've got to know when to make the necessary adjustments to keep the progress going for that individual. That right there, in a nutshell, will That's what a trainer should be able to do. I couldn't care less if somebody posted what their diet is. They could do it every day. It would make no difference to me. There's no secrets.
Jim, we got a question in from a listener. He wants to know what you think the average pro's cycle looks like.
What it looks like? Well, there's a piece of paper and there's a bunch of writing.
You know what I mean, Jim.
Geez, the average pro. Well, I'm going to get shit for this on the boards. I know I am. I know a lot of pros, and I'm around the game still, even though I don't want to be, but to a degree. But there's a difference between off season contests too. I'll answer it this way: you might have a guy in the off season, a pro. You might see him doing 1500 megs, but then 7-8 weeks out, as they progress towards the show, they're throwing in worlds or doing other things. Now you're hitting 2, 3, 4 grams a week. You're going to have some guys even going past that. Maybe 7-8 grams. I think that's very rare, but you'll have them.
Why? I know the answer, but for our listeners, why would a pro take so much considerably more in the pre-contest phase as opposed to the off-season phase?
Well, I don't want to make it sound like they're doing nothing in the off-season, but what I'm saying is, let's say you're using Anadrol. Let's say you're using 100 mg of Anadrol a day, times 7 at 700 mg just of one oral. And you might have them using Anadrol, they may be using some Primo orals. Maybe they're using Halotest, and they're very close to the show. So your milligrams per week are going to raise considerably just from the orals. I think bodybuilding is ridiculous nowadays with the drugs. I think it's out of hand. I think it's a pharmacy. But not only are these guys taking steroids, which are not that dangerous for you, and that's my opinion, I'm sticking to it, but they're using all these other drugs, cancer drugs and fertility drugs.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, I saw my wife come into shows beating people. What was her name? Sue Price. Remember Sue Price?
Yeah.
And her husband. What's his name? Sue's husband.
I
remember his name. I remember him coming up to my wife after the prejudging when she got sixth place, and he says, "What the hell did you do?" And this is coming from her husband. Sue Price was ripped to shreds at her shows. And I remember him coming up there going, "My God, you're shredded." And I'm thinking, this is very interesting too, because this was early on. This was in 93, and I'm thinking, it was all diet. And it made me really realize, even though I've been training people for a while at that point, it really made me realize that there really aren't any secrets. I mean, just dieting very hard. She dieted so hard for that show. I mean, she retired after that. And it took her 11 years to want to come back and do a show. And she didn't want to do bodybuilding because she just didn't agree with the drug use, which again, I'm not, teach his own. But again, like I say, it's just diet. It's all diet when you get that ripped. No special drugs.
Well, Jim, we are just running out of time, my friend.
Yeah.
I want to thank you very much for coming on and being so honest, and we appreciate it.
No, thank you very much. I had a good time. I hope the listeners enjoyed the show, and it was an honor to be on the show. I enjoyed it, and if you ever want me back.
Of course, we will, Jim. Absolutely. I'll give you a call, man. Stay in touch.
Hey, and we also want to thank Mel Chansey for calling in during the first hour of the show and making time for us. And we also want to thank all of you who take the time to listen to the show, whether you're listening to this in a replay podcast while you're doing cardio,
or if you listen live, thank you very, very much. We'll see everybody next week. Right, Aaron?
That's it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Over and out.
Bye, Jim.
Bye, Jim.
Bye-bye. Bye, Carl. All
right, Aaron.
Bye.
Nigel just needs that helping hand. And if young Nigel says he's happy, he must be happy. He must be happy. He must be happy.